Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. The last time the Bengals won their preseason opener, they went to the Super Bowl. Cincinnati beat Detroit 16-14 last night at Paycor. Joe Burrow saw limited action, going 6 of 5 for 39 yards. He was sacked once, and his second drive was capped off by a 56-yard Evan McPherson field goal. Bengals will host the Bears next Saturday night. Thursday night in Pittsburgh, the Steelers beat the Packers 28-9 in the preseason opener for both teams. Will Howard missed his rookie preseason with a broken hand. He made the most of last night, going 7 of 9 for 86 yards. Howard engineered a two-minute touchdown drive to end the first half. Week 1 of the preseason continues tonight and Saturday. Browns will not see Caleb Williams Saturday when they play in Chicago. Ben Johnson says Williams is unlikely to play in the preseason. Cleveland's going to start Deshaun Watson at Soldier Field in a game you can hear right here on The Fan Saturday at 1. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 Ultimate Buckeye Experiences. Tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Well, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Friday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Loaded up for you on a sort of football Friday, sort of. Next week we'll do the high schools, get them all jacked up. So we're getting there. We're getting closer. Coming up at 9:30, Deshaun Watson will start for the Cleveland Browns on Saturday. What do we expect out of his performance? First time he's played in an NFL game since October of 2024. So very curious to see what that looks like. 10 o'clock, the Buckeyes and the honors in the preseason continue to roll in. We are going to attempt to predict the AP top five, or do we do 10? We'll decide on that. Top five or top 10. The AP preseason poll drops today at noon. Tim May will step by at 10:30, 11 o'clock. What we learned this week at 11:30, Mr. Le Maurice drops by. Listen, this is what we do. It's what we do. And so last night I had kind of the quintessential Ohio experience. NBC is a freshman now, and so we were in our second run through of scrimmages, and so freshman team. So we go out and we scrimmage, played well, had a nice grab and some nice tackles on defense, and you watch a little of the varsity stuff, and then you come home and you flip on the TV and you got some preseason football on, and you see the Bengals and the way they play, and you see what's going on in Pittsburgh and Will Howard and Drew Aller and all of these things. And you're just kind of reminded that something that we've talked about for a while on here, I think you could make an argument in certain spots that various parts of the country are best at certain things. I don't know that you could make an argument that any state in the union is better at football Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This is just what we do best. There are other states who could argue that, Friday Night Lights in Texas, man, you got to see it. Yeah, it's great. It's great. Friday Night Lights in Florida, in Georgia, massive stadiums, all of that stuff. Yeah, we got that. We've got that too. We can do that. We have that. There are states that say, yeah, but we've got Saturday in Death Valley, or we got Saturday in South Bend. Well, we can do that. We got the shoe. We're fine. NFL, you got people say, boy, Lambeau, you got to go to Lambeau. You got to go to Buffalo. I mean, the success hasn't been there, but I would put a Sunday up in Cleveland on a Browns game up against anything in the National Football League, especially when they're having a little bit of success. And there just isn't anybody that does it better than us. There's a reason that the Hall of Fame is here. There's a reason that the Ohio State football program means what it means to everybody. There's a reason that we have schools in this state. You think about the history of Massillon High School. You think about all of this incredible talent that has come from this state that is wearing gold jackets when you go down to Hall of Fame weekend. It is what we do better than anybody else. And it's back, and it's good. It's good to be back. I know a lot of the youth football is firing up this weekend. There's some middle school stuff, I think, starts next week. And then what do we bake next Friday? We're go, right? Week one?
Yeah, right here on the Fan.
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Defending state champs, Olentangy Orange playing Olentangy Berlin.
Come on. You got your prep? You got your boards? You ready?
We are in the midst of all of it still. I've got a stack of sheets out there on my desk right now, Bo. They're probably about 4 or 5 inches thick.
Just ready to go.
I've read part of them. I haven't read all of them yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rite of passage, right? You think about, Reese, you think about getting, you get the Phil Steele magazine and you start doing, I mean, that's why we drop 20 most interesting when we do. That's pretty strategic on our part. We want that to line up through from July. So you're going to get your media days. You're going to get for all the colleges. And then ideally what we do on the timing on that is so that ends when now we are at, we're, it's so awesome. We're able to be at the first couple of days of Ohio State football camp, but we time that up so where that ends right as college football is kicking off in terms of the practices. And then we'll start two-a-days, I think, next week, and that will get you through on your NFL preparation as you lead into the NFL season dropping there. So everything here is pretty strategic, and there's a rhythm to it. And Reese, you've been with me a while now on this stuff, and it just kind of builds to this point where we're at last night. We're not going to sit here and make the biggest deal about preseason football, though we may have a little bit of fun. But it's still, it's fun. It's fun to see our teams.
Yeah, I was really hoping to. I was going to make a big deal out of Drew Aller and Will Howard and what the Steelers are going to do with their second and third quarterbacks. It is always something that you dread a little bit in the summertime because it can get long. The seasons, especially football and covering college football from what, damn, end of August to now end of January. But when it returns, there's nothing like it. And so last night was just a little taste of that. It was where you had football on a couple channels. I know here locally, NBC had the Steelers game. And so you were able to cut in with that. ESPN, their Unlimited, had a couple of different options. If you know a guy who might be pushing buttons here that has a black box, you can see so many different markets of so many different teams. And it's just good to have that kind of football back in your life. And for Ohio, it's just special anytime Joe Burrow takes the field. So last night just felt a little different with the Bengals and the Lions because it's been a minute since you've seen Burrow and kind of look like the Bengals of the first couple weeks of the season, you know, with Burrow giving up, with the line giving up a sack. Maybe Burrow holds onto the ball for too long, and that's more overreaction I can't wait to get into later on in this program. But yeah, I don't even care about the Cleveland Guardians anymore because it's football season. it just feels right.
Hypothetically, yeah, Reese. Hypothetically. And, Bo, you mentioned Ohio and how they do football. There was an Ohio tie in almost every game last night. You're watching the Bengals game, obviously, and the Bengals are there. Seth McLaughlin is out there playing center for the Detroit Lions, trying to make a roster. In the other game, at one point, you had Kyle McCord and Will Howard as the quarterbacks of the team in that. Then Jack Sawyer gets his first preseason sack against Kyle McCord. Drew Aller, an Ohio kid, playing quarterback there. So you're right, almost all those games last night had some kind of an Ohio tie. Even if it's not the best football, there's something there that you can get into if you want to.
I was on with Tyvus and Joshua right before our show on the crossover, and we were talking a little bit, and you know, they both mentioned how when people say the preseason games don't matter, oh no, they matter a lot. They just don't matter to the casual fan because you're worried about the ones, and it doesn't matter too much with the ones. But when you have, I asked Tyvus, I said, how many roster spots, his rookie year with Seattle, how many roster spots are actually open? And he said 4 or 5. Well, there's 80 some people there. Okay. That means 40 some dudes are competing for 4 or 5 spots, right? Think about it. And Joshua said like maybe upwards of 10 at most. I think of my time with the Browns, certainly at the time when they were, you know, in the playoffs and a contender with Baker and all of that. And even some of the Flacco stuff with Amari Cooper and all of that, we would go to Zagura and I do this thing. We'd start to do like the roster count and we'd be like, wow, there's really only like 6 jobs up for grabs on this thing. That's it. Like all the rest of these cats are gone or they're going to get to a practice squad, but they're not going to make this roster. They're not going to make the 53. And that's where this stuff matters so greatly. And that's why when it lines up right and you have a show like Hard Knocks that documents the roster building, especially at the very end, if they're lucky enough to get a hold of a guy who's right on the cusp of in out, those are the best stories. Because there's nothing else like it. You think about, And Tyvus mentioned how emotional he was playing that first preseason game for the Seahawks. Think about that journey from high school. I mean, hell, I covered Joshua Perry in high school. I remember him as a high school player, for crying out loud. Covered him in high school, then at Ohio State, then all the way through the NFL. I remember rolling tape. We rolled on both of their preseason debuts looking for like highlights to run in the 10 o'clock news or 11 o'clock news. Go ahead, Bake.
I was just going to say, and one of my favorite things about that is like I remember Joshua Perry more as a running back in high school than a linebacker. I remember watching Jerome Baker play, and you're like, man, this kid's going to Ohio State as a linebacker, but he's a hell of a running back.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's
that's
always
what's fun
to watch.
That was always fun. I loved, it's funny, at Channel 10 or in my previous stop at the CBS affiliate in Tallahassee, even my first stop at the CBS affiliate in Billings, Montana, I loved high school football Friday night. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And it is so cool when a kid from your town, if you're a fan, or a kid who plays for another team that comes in and you're like, man, he seems really good. And then all of a sudden, all of that good faith, that belief that you think that what you're seeing is very, very real is validated on the ultimate stage in the National Football League. Remember going down to look, you know, I remember choppering down to Joe Burrow's games with Chopper 10 when he was at the Plains, and we would chopper down there and shoot his games. We'd shoot like, you couldn't stay long because you had other stops. You were hoping like you could get a score quickly so you could chopper back, like those type of things. And then to see it manifest at the ultimate stage, we get that in Ohio, Reese.
Was there ever a time when you're flying Chopper 10 where Dom seriously asked, let me try?
No, they never let him on it.
Okay.
He never got to go on it.
Huh.
No.
I could see a situation where Dom's like, this doesn't look that hard.
No.
I can try to fly this chopper.
The great Terry Ault never let him. He was always my captain. So there was never, I never saw Dommy ever in the chopper. That was a solo act.
I wouldn't be worried about him trying to fly it so much as, hey, you want to wrestle? Hey. I know you're flying this thing, but let's wrestle.
Hey, let me ask you something. You want to mount me? That's to Barry. That's how that was.
It's classic.
Yeah, that's how that goes. Speaking of Burrow, he did play last night, and a lot of these guys did. We will get into what we saw, and guys with Ohio ties had a big game for the Steelers. What to do with all of these quarterbacks in the league? We'll take a look at all of that. We're off and running on a Friday. Bishop and Friends right here.
ESPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter joins Rothman and Ice every Wednesday at 12:30. And he works blue.
Okay.
The NFL Playbook with Adam Schefter is sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
Indeed it is. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Rain chances are much, much lower for the rest of the day. We'll actually probably see some peaks of sunshine out there as well. Humid still, though, with highs in the lower 80s. Slight chance of a shower or storm overnight, otherwise partly cloudy skies, upper 60s. Watching for another chance of showers and storms on Saturday. Looks like the best chance is going to be later in the day. Humid, highs in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
This is a pretty good tweet from Dan Horde down with the Bengals. For what it's worth, the last time the Bengals won their preseason opener, they went to the Super Bowl. We've been trying to tell you.
Vindication.
I've been trying to tell you guys, like, there's no holes on the roster, kids. Now that's all we need. It's going to happen. I what are they now? Like in the markets as a Super Bowl winner? There was a time when we first brought this to the attention. Weren't they? Was it 20? There was a time when I was like, that seems, they were well down the list. But I'm guessing that some people are starting to get wind of just where they're at.
I believe when we first brought this to everyone's attention, it was 25-1.
That's right.
This says, at least according to whatever odds ESPN uses, it's 20-1.
I think there you go. There's not a team with a higher ceiling you're getting 20-1 with. There just isn't. Burrow went out there, got out there for a couple of series, said it was good for him to get a little work.
Yeah, Dex and I were talking about that, and you know, once you go through warm-ups, once you're out there, you know, you get warm, you get into the flow, and then you just kind of want to stay out there, keep going. You know, that's not where we're at, but you know, as a player, you want to be out there playing.
He also was asked about the benefits of preseason games versus joint practices. Here's Joe.
It's different. Anytime it's live bullets, you know, there's going to be a lot of benefit from that. But, you know, getting a bunch of reps against another team in a practice setting is beneficial too. You know, those are always difficult because you're not game planning and you're running plays, you know, against a system that you probably wouldn't be running in an actual game week. But
I saw he got sacked on the first drive. No thanks. It's almost like just give him a red jersey or something. Just hands off quarterbacks. Like, just don't. None of this is worth it from that perspective. I think this is one of the biggest challenges for a coach. And I've been around several different NFL head coaches and their approach to this. There are some, like for example, McVay, like none of those guys play at all. And it doesn't seem to bother them at all. There are some, like Todd Monken and obviously Zach, who have a very different approach to it and want their guys to play a little bit. With three preseason games instead of four, used to be the first one, nobody played. Second one, starters played. Third, dress rehearsal. Now it feels like it's kind of first, some play. Second, dress rehearsal. Third is kind of the, let's figure out the bottom of the roster situation. I don't know what I would do if I was a coach, if I was in the position that these guys are in. My hunch is, my lean would be for my guys to not play at all. And I would probably have like an all bubble wrap team. Like Burrow, Chase, Higgins. I mean, for the Bengals, there's like 15 bubble wrap guys like that I don't need to see. I don't need to see any of those guys they brought in on defense. I don't need to see any of the skill position players who were ones. I just don't. So I think this is one of those things. Like, you got to get work in. I think the joint practices are perfect because they really go out of their way to protect the quarterbacks. I think for preseason games, for the casual fan, this is a win because you get to see Burrow for a couple of series. But I think for like a diehard Bengals fan, I wouldn't want to see anybody near his feet, near his arm, anywhere.
Yeah, you go back and forth, right? Because if he wants to play, it's Joe Burrow. I don't think there's anybody in that franchise that can tell him no, unless Mike Brown wants to drive out there in a golf cart and be like, you've got to sit this out, man. But I think after that sack in the first series, I think the competitor in him is itching to get back out there for that second series. And I want to say it set a record last night, that 56-yarder by Evan McPherson, at least in a preseason game. Like, I love the idea that, bleep it, let's just kick the thing.
Yeah.
But for Burrow, it's like I want him to play, and I want him to be ready for week one, so there isn't that week one early season malaise that's really hurt the Bengals in their postseason aspirations over the last couple of seasons. But yeah, when he goes down that first drive, it's almost like, nope.
Yeah.
We should be good here, but if he wants to play, like he said in that thing, he wants to keep playing, it's like, damn it.
Yeah.
I'm a guy that usually says play because I think game reps are different. Even if it's just preseason, it's a different team, and I understand the joint practices. They do them a lot like a game, but I think it's just something different out there in front of the fans. I think game reps matter, and I think we have poo-pooed preseason way too much. However, Joe Burrow, I don't think there's any need for him to be out there. He's had plenty of reps with all of his receivers. Yoshivas, Chase, Higgins, Gesicki, they've all been there for a long time. And those are the guys you have to worry about right now. The fourth, fifth, sixth wide receivers. Oh, well, we'll burn that bridge when you get there. So that's one, especially with the injury history. When you see him take a couple sacks last night, you're like, Joe, just throw the ball out of bounds.
Get rid of it, brother. Get rid of it. Don't need to see it. Coaches got to be honest to themselves. Like, I mean, McVay never plays any of his guys in the preseason, and they're just fine. So, like, it just you just have to be honest to who you are as a coach. Todd Monken's approach has been very different than Kevin Stefanski's in training camp. I've seen them both firsthand, you know, especially now back-to-back, and just very, very different approaches. Todd uses, if he's allowed 2 hours and 15 minutes, he uses every second of 2 hours and 15 minutes. Kevin, a lot of times, would cut practice is short because and that worked for him, and we'll see if this works for Todd. That's just something that I've seen anecdotally with the Browns, but everybody's got to be honest. The other thing that I think is going to be really interesting, the Steelers played last night and a lot of local ties with this one. Will Howard looked pretty dang good. He went in after, so they went Mason Rudolph, then to Will, then to Drew Aller. Will, what did he end up? 7 of 9 in this one for 86, had a 2 minute drive where he made a couple of nice throws, and then Drew Aller came in and looked really good. It's never been about tools for Drew. Ever. Bacon, I know you like him a lot. He went 10 of 13, 153, 2 touchdowns in the second half of this one. Here's the thing that's pretty cool if you're Pittsburgh with either one of these guys. And now they've had 2 years to look at Will. And by the way, drafting Drew probably tells you what they thought of Will in terms of his ability, just be honest about it, his ability to maybe be the franchise quarterback there. So I don't know why you'd still need Mason Rudolph. I would think either one of these dudes could go in and play games if something were to happen to Aaron Rodgers. And your ceiling doesn't really change much, in my view. And your ceiling, if Rodgers is to get hurt, this was an old line from the Colts when they had Peyton Manning. If 18 gets hurt, it really doesn't matter who the backup is. We are done. That was Bill Polian's thought with, that's why he never spent on backup quarterbacks, is if he goes down, the season's lost anyway. It doesn't matter. And that's kind of the thing here. So like if I'm Pittsburgh and I'm doing the roster spot juggle, I don't know what I need Mason Rudolph for. Like either one of these dudes can be the backup to Rodgers. And if something happens to Rodgers, this becomes a developmental season to see if either one of those guys can be the long-term answer. And maybe either one of them could. Who knows? But let them see. I know what Mason Rudolph is. I don't need to see him do anything else.
Yeah, I'd wondered last night watching that thing. They're throwing Mason Rudolph out there, I think, as a, if somebody would like to come get him, please make us an offer. Because Joshua Dobbs, Luke Altmaier were your quarterbacks for Detroit.
And that's boy, exactly what I was
they're
thinking.
They're in so much trouble if Goff goes down. So it's that question of there are going to be teams that are going to be making moves at quarterback. And I think you're going to see a ton of musical chairs happen before or around that August 30th 53-man cutdown date. And the quarterback, I think, quarterback's going to be one of, if not the most moved position before you get your rosters finalized. Because boy,
just from a numbers standpoint, yep. I mean, like the Browns can't keep all four of those guys.
Can the Steelers roll three?
You're gonna keep three on the initial 53, but then I mean neither Howard nor Aller is gonna get through onto a practice squad. Both of them would be claimed, I would think. So they're gonna keep those three. My guess is Rudolph goes, and they just need to see what if the other two are ready. But you know they're a loyal operation. I mean Rudolph left at one point. He went to Tennessee, and then he's back. So maybe there's some sort of value there. Like you think of the teams that would be like, I guess like the ultra contenders. I don't know what Mason Rudolph's money is, but you think about like the team that are ultra contenders. If you had like a short-term injury to Darnold, you know, could Rudolph come? I don't know Jalen Milroe is the backup in Seattle?
Like, yeah, they drafted him, in the third round
Third round a couple of years ago. But I mean, he would be a big change of pace stylistically from Darnold. So is that a situation where they're looking for somebody to kind of be it if something were to happen to Sam? But a lot of the top end programs are kind of set up already there. So I don't know. I thought both the guys look good. I think Aller is going to be a fascinating because the pound of clay is really good. He just like in terms of the way he went about his business, there were some things that had to get shortened up big time in his mechanics. And I just think he was done pretty dirty at Penn State. Of no fault of anybody's. They just had different coordinators. And then last year was an absolute mess of a season with the early losses and then Franklin getting fired.
It was interesting because right after they drafted him in their first rookie minicamps, it was like, there's a lot of things we got to change to this dude's mechanics. Mm-hmm. We've got to change a lot. And then if you've paid attention at all to people who have followed the Steelers here in camp the last week or so, it's like, man, this guy has really come on. He's looking really good. So much that it was like, there's no doubt he's QB number two on this team right now.
Yeah. And so, like, if you're them, I mean, someone's got to go. And then maybe if you're them, you land into a little bit of a lottery ticket here. Like, if they stumble into Aller, what was he, a third round pick?
He's
a three.
That sounds right.
Yep.
So now you stumble into it and we'll see if maybe you're onto something. But I think that Pittsburgh situation, that's a fun one because now you got a couple of guys who McCarthy can develop or try to develop. And obviously he would have been on board with Aller because he was there when they picked him. So there's something that he liked in his game that he thinks is very, very developable. On the other side of this, tomorrow at 1:00, Deshaun Watson will take snaps for the first time since October of 2024. What do we expect? What should you expect from Watson? We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fix.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up, Jew?
Sponsored by Apex Pros. The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Friday edition of the program. The Browns make their 2026 preseason debut in a game you can listen to right here on The Fan in Chicago against the Chicago Bears. Did you, McCaskey had to come out yesterday, by the way, as a quick aside and say, yeah, we're going to be the Chicago
Bears. So was there truth to that tweet?
No, I don't think
so. He's got to come out and make a statement.
I think that this is what happens in the year of our Lord 2026, that nobody knows what's real and what isn't. And so all of a sudden something like that, which is very clearly and obviously utter nonsense, goes viral to the point where like ownership has to respond. I don't know. Maybe they had a presser already scheduled. Maybe they had one anyway where they were going to talk about all of this because they got a lot going on over there. So maybe they did anyway, and maybe that the timing of it just worked. Because normally as an organization, you could just send out a statement saying, we're up, whatever happens, whether it's Arlington Heights or one of the two sites down in Indiana that they're looking at, you know, we're going to be the Chicago Bears. So I that just seemed nonsensical as soon as you read that. Go ahead,
Bruce. So during Courtney Cronin covers the Bears for ESPN, and she said during his annual address at training camp. So George H. McCaskey talks to the media every year at training camp and was asked about the Hammond Bears, or the Gary Bears would be the better name. But
that does sound better. Yeah. That's the operation that should do the thing with the private equity. That's the one that should do it, because the Bears at a valuation of probably upwards of $10 billion, 40% of that, $4 billion to somebody. They pick up a share of the stadium, and away you go. You probably could have done a private-public split and made it work somewhere where they would want to be, whether that would be Arlington Heights or the initial downtown location. So anyway, first time ever. This is going to be a special one for Todd Monken. Let's do that side of it first. Todd Monken's family is legendary in the state of Illinois. Legendary high school football coaching family. Like this, there are multiple stadiums in the state of Illinois that are named after Monken. So they're a legendary football family in the state of Illinois. And so for him to be in his 60s making his head coaching debut in Chicago, albeit in a preseason game, is going to be pretty special. Just in that sense, Todd is going to call plays from the field, something he hasn't done since he was at Southern Miss. So he said that's some getting used to. I got to get used to on that side as well. In addition to that, and obviously the number one intrigue will be around the quarterback. And so both quarterbacks are going to get a start. That was the plan that Todd Monken kind of laid out earlier this week. It'll be Deshaun Watson on the road at Chicago tomorrow, and it'll be Shedeur Sanders at home against Buffalo next week. For Deshaun Watson, this will be the first time that he has played in an NFL game since October of 2024. It has been a long time. He has had moments in camp where he looks pretty brilliant, really does. He's consistently, over the last week or so, really shined. Still has some of those mistakes, still knocking off some of that rust, but whatever it looks like in practice, what does it look like with live bullets? Deshaun was asked if this is the best camp he's had as a Brown. Here was his answer.
Yeah, of course. You know, I have a clear vision. I have a clear mind. So, I mean, I think the world know what I went through. It's no secret, you know, off the field and then on the field also with injuries. So, I think for anybody that had, you know, what I went through would be in a different spot maybe, you know. So, I think I'm mentally tough and, you know, dealt with it as best as I possibly could to be able to be standing here talking with you guys, you know. So I think if I would have handled it differently, I definitely wouldn't be, you know, sitting right here, you know, in front of you guys on my fifth year.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I remember his very first camp with the Browns when the Browns thought that his suspension would be 4 to 6 games. And at the end of a joint practice, I want to say it was against Philly, he got word that it would be 10, and it was shocking. At that point, the length of that, and it ended up being 10, and then he'd been hurt over and over again, and just, he just never had it. And so, yeah, this is, having seen them all, this is by far the best that he has looked in a camp. Obviously, the sooner Todd Monken can make a decision on this, the better for all involved, because Deshaun and Shedeur are very different stylistically in terms of what you're going about your business offensively. Deshaun has some of the elements that Todd used last year in Baltimore with Lamar. You can use with Deshaun, less so with Shedeur. He does not have the mobility that Deshaun has. He's got escapability, but he doesn't have the mobility. And so that's the difference. Both these guys want more. Here's Deshaun on how much more first team reps would help him.
Yeah, I mean, it's very helpful. I think it's very helpful when you get to, you know, speak with the, or play with the same guys, practice with the same guys, so you kind of build that trust, and you build that, okay, this guy's coming out this way. Everyone is different. Everyone has different tendencies. Everyone has different ways of running routes and, how explosive they are, you know, catch radius, radius, you know, everything about that. So, you know, it's obviously it's hard to going back and forth and different guys, but, you know, you just try to, you know, learn as much as possible and try to trust it as much as possible until that opportunity comes.
The other quarterback in this competition is Shedeur Sanders. He will play the third quarter of the game tomorrow in Chicago and then start the home game against Buffalo. Here is Shedeur on the effect of splitting first team reps.
That doesn't even faze me or get to me or I think about that at all. You know, I'm just thankful to be out able to practice. Sometimes you got to sit back and reflect on why would I feel negative in this situation if last year was a total different situation. So I think about things that I'm thankful for in life and not that I really want. If you live in that want world, then you can always be searching.
I'm going to give you guys just a rundown of, and this I think will explain kind of the difference of starter versus second team in this current situation. So let's say there is a period with 20 plays in it of 11 on 11. So the way that they've been doing it is as follows. Deshaun would get the starting quarterback. So let the last practice that was open was Wednesday. That was a Shedeur day. So Shedeur got the first five plays. Deshaun got the second five plays. Shedeur got the third five plays, and then Dylan got the fourth five plays. So do that math over the course of a practice, and you see the difference between if you're the one, if it's your day with the ones or your day with the twos. It's a dramatic difference in snaps gotten. And they're getting a lot of plays. I mean, they're doing 70 plays in a practice, which is more than you normally get, but that's the difference. What do I expect out of Deshaun Watson on Saturday? I don't know. I couldn't even begin to tell you. Because there's a, Rothman has this great word, humanalytics, that I've stolen, just blatantly stolen from him. It's really smart. And the idea of it is you can look at things on film and on tape and analytics. You can say, well, this should work. Humanalytics is what's inside somebody's head. So I don't know for Deshaun Watson. I don't know what that's going to look like tomorrow. I don't know if he said in one of those bites we just played, guys, I'm seeing it clearly, all of those things. I think in practice, that is backed up. There were throws that he made this week in practice where he had that bounce and he looked like, well, this is clearly the dude. But I don't know if that'll transfer to Saturday. And I don't know if anybody does, including Deshaun.
I think for me as a Browns fan, I just want to see a competent offense. And for Watson, even for Shedeur, I expect them to turn the ball over because that's just both of the individual rides we go on with each quarterback. For Watson, if it's an interception and it's a catchable ball that a guy it tips, the guy doesn't catch it and it goes into a defender's hand, I can forgive that. But if he plunks it off a guy's noggin or if he just throws it wildly to where nobody is except for the defensive back, then that's something that I think is justified. You can be justifiably critical about. I also, for both quarterbacks, if Shedeur is going to get in there with, you know, the twos or the threes against the Bears, probably threes, because I think it was, yeah, Ben Johnson was like, I don't have any interest in seeing Caleb Williams. And so I think there's a trickle down effect there with most of those ones will not see action Saturday at Soldier Field. To just be competent and run the offense, no dumb procedural penalties, get to the line, get the ball snapped. Don't turn the ball over. And I think you can eke out a 3-point win.
I guess I'm not even worried about wins or losses, especially in the preseason. It's just, does it look right to me?
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned the procedural penalties, Reese. Like that's something that seemed to plague this team under Freddie Kitchens, under Kevin Stefanski. There were always unnecessary penalties pre-snap that would always get this team. Is that stuff cleaned up? Can you get the team in and out of the huddle? Are you making the right reads? If a play is there, are you taking it? And also sometimes if the option presents, throwing that 50-50 ball down the field and letting these young receivers go get it. You know, just making smart football plays. Let me know that if nothing else, the Cleveland Browns will have almost competent quarterback play this year.
If they do, they're going to go over the over total because the offensive weaponry is there. Something clicked with Watson about 10 days ago, and he went from like a guy who was all checked down to starting to drive the ball. And so that's what I'm looking for. Is he willing to drive the ball down the field? If he's trying to play quarterback with the in his mindset of don't make a mistake, then he's already failed. The other thing I would say on this is Todd Monken can say whatever the plans are, but there's a great line from the immortal Randy Macho Man Savage. Whoops, changed my mind. Champion's prerogative. That's a terrible impression. But coach's prerogative, you can change anything you want whenever you want. If I'm Deshaun Watson and I get my first day at this thing and I get my first crack as a starting quarterback in a preseason game and I light this thing up, I make it so obvious that I'm the guy that I get all the one reps against Buffalo in that joint practice on Thursday. You can have the start the following Saturday against Buffalo. Enjoy yourself. I've won the job. That would be my mentality if I'm Deshaun Watson, is to be so good Saturday that nobody needs to see anything else. And as I've laid out many times, it would be more beneficial for them as an organization if Shador wins this thing. That's a much easier path in terms of keeping him as a long-term quarterback. He's under contract. Deshaun is not. So there are a lot of variables to this thing. But if I'm Watson, my mindset Saturday is I'm going to play so good that this thing's done. And I think at any point it could be. I think Monken is just looking for a reason for either one of these guys to be anointed. He doesn't want this to go on any longer than it has to either. He can feel the clock ticking on it. Go ahead, Vic.
Bo, real quick, what did you make of Monken's comments this week saying that Shador had a stronger arm?
Todd didn't say that.
So he did not say that?
No, that was, I saw that from one of the NFL Network guys. No, I don't recall Todd saying that at all. And he doesn't.
And that's what everybody has said. Everybody's like, that's absolutely not true.
No, no. Deshaun's arm definitely has more pep. Shador's is plenty. Shador, I don't know, maybe it was said wrong, or maybe interpreted wrong. Shador throws an incredible deep ball. He always has. He throws a deep ball down the sideline. He puts the right loft on it, the timing on it. They had that one to Bond. Was that Wednesday? Hit the deep ball to Bond. That's a perfect throw. Like he has that throw in him. He connects on those deep balls. But in terms of stronger arm, I didn't hear Todd say that. So I don't think that's from Todd. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. And that would not be representative of what we've seen in practice for sure. We do have an update in Numbergate down in Baton Rouge. We'll get to that in a Field of Dream games as well. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
A resident gambling degenerate, Steve Biddle and Scotty Vegas for On the Money. Sunday mornings at 9.
Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
The best hair on the air. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. Boy, they tried to clear this thing up yesterday with this number gate down with Jaden Daniels, and it just got deeper and deeper in the muck. Jaden put out a statement. I have been locked in on training camp, and that's been my number one focus. I have a lot of gratitude for my time at LSU. I'm proud of what my teammates and I accomplished there. Obviously, there are issues to be worked out between my team and LSU, and my hope is it will get done privately. My sole personal focus is on Commanders football. I realize the business of football is unique, and I trust this can be resolved. This line, there are issues to be worked out with my team and LSU. Your team?
It's just you.
Your team, Reese, your team, come on.
They don't send the cease and desist without you. Like, they're not just going to operate like that. You were the one that said their statement, his team's statement, team, to LSU, yeah, was Jaden feels disrespected.
I think Jaden thinks he's Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Would be my read of this, or his team thinks he's Joe Burrow. He's not Joe Burrow. He's not. He went 19-7. He won a Heisman. It's great. But he's not Burrow. I saw Kiffin asked about this. He was asked, like, if somebody asked to wear number 9, and Kiffin was like, I don't want to get into it. LSU even put the DJ Pickett kid on the podium And he said, I'm not changing numbers. What a mess.
Good, he shouldn't. And Kiffin shouldn't. Kiffin doesn't have to answer the 9 question. I think it speaks for itself.
I mean, are you, like, if you, whoever asked the question, like, if somebody asked, like, if you can't tell the difference between those two careers at LSU, both played their 2 years, I believe. Both played their 2 years. Both won a Heisman, and then that's the end of the comparison. One quarterbacked one of the best teams we've ever seen to one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen and won a national championship. The other guy, as Paul Feinbaum put it, beat Alabama once. I mean, that's the difference there. So that's a pretty silly one. Bake, I did want to ask you about the poll question. Should Zach Werenski, who was available yesterday, be made the captain of the Blue Jackets?
I think you already know my feelings on this. I don't know how you could give him the C. My guess is the Blue Jackets don't have a captain this year. I guess it would be three guys with A's, probably Coyle, Olivier, and Zach. Goodbranson has been a part of that leadership group as well. I tell you, that was kind of shocking yesterday. Like, I don't think anybody here knew that was happening.
I didn't know
that was going to happen yesterday. And I don't, as I'm listening to all of that, Bo, I don't understand why no one asks the question. So, Zach, you say you want to be here and you want to win in Columbus. Does that mean July 1st next year you are signing an extension with this team? I just don't get how that question is asked. And then as we go along here, he says, well, Don and I, we've had great conversations all off season.
Yeah.
Then I think the question is, Zach, how did you end up traded to the Dallas Stars then?
Mm-hmm.
If you guys have had such good communication, how do you end up at the Stars? And then he says, I can speak for my communication with Don. I can't speak to my agents and Don. Well, I can't speak exactly to what they're talking about. So, Zach, do you have an agent problem? Is your agent saying things that are not representing your feelings? I just don't know how we ended up on, well, how'd you end up on stage with Luke Combs and how'd your summer go? And like, these questions need to be asked.
So the Daily Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. And the question has about 100 respondents. 73% of those respondents say yes. He should be the captain of this team. And
okay,
I disagree.
I could not agree with you more and the 73 less. For all of the reasons that Bake just said, I just think the question just would have been, if offered a contract extension, are you signing it? That's the question. Like, it doesn't have to be more difficult than that. And no, until you know that he's all in, I can't. And everything Bake said is absolutely on point in terms of the questions and the things that should be asked. And I do wonder, just like, have people already like forgotten that he was traded to the Stars? Like, is that... Have we just, the life comes at you fast and we have such attention deficit disorder as a society, sports fans, that we just like forget that all of that happened? I mean, that's kind of the only way to explain it.
And he was asked about that situation, like actually getting traded to the Stars.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't really want to talk about that. This Columbus is where I wanted to be, whatever. But like when you say, well, our conversations have been good. That question needs to be asked, like, how did you end up traded then, yeah. Zach? Like, what was exactly said? And at one point he said something about the 2 years left on his deal, and ideally I would be here longer. Well, I'm pretty sure if you tell Don Waddell you want to be here longer, we'll get the contract ready, and it'll be there July 1st waiting for you.
Hey, I was in Montana for a week. Did they extend Fantilli in that time?
He's still not signed.
Five months ago, I said he should be the captain. But, you know.
Weird summer, man. Very weird summer for them.
I think, weird, yeah, but not a good summer.
Not a good and odd, just an odd one. A lot of honors coming for the Buckeyes on the preseason side of things. Sain and Smith pick up another one. We get you the details on that and what Arthur Smith can bring to this offense. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reese, sir. We're 22 days away from Ohio State and Ball State, Saturday, September 5th at Ohio Stadium. It'll be a 12:30 kick from the shoe. Football Buckeyes are back to practice today and tomorrow with a day off Sunday. Head coach Ryan Day is going to speak with the media following Saturday's practice. At noon today, the Associated Press will unveil their preseason top 25. Ohio State earned the top spot in the coaches' preseason poll. In the NFL last night, week one of the preseason kicked off in Cincinnati. The Bengals beat the Lions 16-14. Joe Burrow played in two series, going 5-6 for 39 yards. His second series was capped by a 56-yard field goal by Evan McPherson. Dan Hord's the radio voice of the Bengals, and he says the last time Cincinnati won their preseason opener, they went to the Super Bowl. The Browns begin the preseason Saturday in Chicago at 1 o'clock here on The Fan. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Open the savings account for the youth in your life with just $5 at BMI Federal Credit Union, and they'll put $100 in a youth certificate.
Tom Tiberi for a decade. The broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Second hour on a Friday edition of the program. Want to get into the Buckeye offense in a second, but I was thinking about something in the break. We were talking about the Werenski stuff, then we were talking about quarterback stuff and all of it. I saw a clip of Joe Burrow talking about LSU. He was asked about the Jaden Daniels thing, and he said that LSU told him that they wouldn't issue his number anymore. And we talked about the retired number stuff a little bit yesterday. And then I started thinking about Will Howard a little bit. And is Will Howard, because both Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow played just 2 years at LSU. Will Howard just played 1 year here. Is Will Howard like the best fling in Ohio State sports history?
Yes.
It's just 1 year. I mean, the others are probably like Connolly Oden and who else is like...
There's nobody that won a title in just the singular season.
And then encapsulates kind of everything.
I mean, the moments that he provided from that season, like the putting the cigarette out, the fourth down, the gutsy throws and the smiling on the sidelines. No, there's nothing. There's nobody's had a better one-year fling for Ohio State, really, maybe even college football.
Conley Oden are a good one because that was a heck of a basketball year for Ohio State. And they just ran into that juggernaut Florida team that brought everybody back. Yeah. D'Angelo Russell was a comet that came through that I don't think anybody was expecting.
No.
I don't know. That's so tough for me because I have so many mixed feelings about that team. Because I look at that team in two different lights. I look at the regular season, which was just really brutal. I mean, they weren't
fun.
They lost two games, but they never lived up to potential. And then all of a sudden, they got to the playoffs, and it was like they were world beaters. So it's tough.
And it's not even storybook for Will in the beginning. I mean, go back and go read like the comments, like go to 11 Warriors and find their game story on the loss at Oregon and go read the comments. It was all on him. It was all on him. And he didn't really become like put out the cigarette guy until the Penn State game.
Oh, because there was all of that before about how they didn't recruit him and
they didn't recruit
he had that
him.
Chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, that's when. And didn't he throw a pick? Early
first
on in that
throw,
game,
maybe?
Like in the first drive,
It was the first. It was down like on the goal line
or
something.
Jeremiah went into motion and everybody's like, yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
And Penn State saw it.
Yeah, and that's when it kind of flipped for him.
I'll give you the one that's the biggest. And it has a little shine taken off of it because some of the things that happened after. But it's Maurice Claret.
I knew where you were going.
It's Maurice Claret.
I still think it's Howard.
Is Howard more beloved, though, now?
Yeah.
Than Maurice?
I don't know, because I don't have that feeling. I don't have that beloved feeling with Will Howard. like I do, like a Troy Smith, or, and I know it's a, yeah, I know we're talking about different things there, but yeah, I just don't, I don't
those
have
guys
that.
Are like, those are guys you married.
That,
like Will Howard, we had a fling.
The Claret year.
So, I mean, it was so short, such a short time.
The Claret year in 02 is always one of my fondest Ohio State memories ever because they hadn't won one in so long, and they don't win it without him.
He's my pick for most, he's up there as most talented Buckeye, and if they had had more seasons with him, like that's the incredible what if, or at least the biggest what if for me for Ohio State football. But because of how Howard left things and what he's meant, I mean, he's got Browns fans watching Steelers preseason games rooting for the Pittsburgh Steelers to score touchdowns. Like, I just think the way it ended with Maurice became so toxic, and I never felt any hard feelings toward Claret because just life, you know, with what happened between him and Andy Geiger, and all of that was a mess.
Yeah.
With Willie, well, there wasn't anything messy.
And Reese would tell you this. I mean, I've asked him this. I've interviewed him several times through the years. And, like, he made a bunch of mistakes afterward that clouded the way I think people view him. I think it's been really cool that Ryan brought him back in and has had him be such an integral part and has had him talk to these kids about all these things. That might be a fun... How would we word it, though, so that we wouldn't say the best single season? Because I'm not interested in that. Would the way to do it on a poll be who is your most beloved Buckeye fling? And, or it could be, how would you phrase it?
1 year Buckeye say, that made the biggest impact.
No, you can't do that because that's Claret. Because I'm not talking.
Do we say favorite 1 year fling?
That's what it's got to be, something about that, because it's really not about necessarily just what they did on the field or their importance to the team, although Wills was obviously critical, but it's more just about, like, God, I love that guy.
Who's your,
and I hardly knew him. But I mean, that's kind of what it's got to be.
Who's your most beloved 1 year Buckeye?
Yeah, and then you could do Claret, Connolly Oden, and Will Howard. Because we got 2 years. No thanks to Kevin Warren. We got a year and a half of Justin Fields. Otherwise, I'd put him on that. Yeah. I mean, that might be the way to phrase it. Because it's not about... I mean, Maurice Claret was the engine of that team.
I mean, he stripped Sean Taylor after Sean Taylor sure picked did. Off Krenzeling. That's one of, if not the greatest defensive play this university's ever seen. And that even speaks to Jack Sawyer's scoop and score.
Yeah, and he had... I mean, beyond that, like, just offensively, everything was built off of his ability in the ground game. Everything was. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's the most, I mean, but good Lord, Connolly and Oden, if you put those two together, that's a hell of a thing that happened there too. So that 2-1 a national title, and obviously it's a football town, so football's going to win out. But yeah, I feel like Will Howard could be elected mayor of Columbus, like governor of Ohio. And he was only here for a year. But that's the way that's what happens when you win. The winners get to write the history book. So very interested to see how that shakes out. Here's what we know about this Buckeye team. We talked about this a little bit yesterday from the defensive perspective, and the roles are kind of reversed. Last year at this time, we knew that the defense was going to be ultra talented. We didn't know how dominant it was going to be, but you were breaking in a redshirt freshman quarterback and you'd never really seen him play game reps. Now, we knew right away in the opener against Texas that he could have taken on a lot more than they gave him. I think I knew by the second quarter that he could handle more than they asked of him in the Texas game. And then he went on to have one of the great single seasons in Buckeye history. He's a Heisman finalist, and now he returns for his sophomore year. He does so with Jeremiah Smith as well. The preseason accolades continue to roll in for Sayanan Smith. They were named ESPN preseason All-Americans, both of them on the first team side. So very cool stuff for both Julian and Jeremiah on that. Speaking of ESPN and the love, Bill Connolly, his SP Plus rankings have the Buckeyes number one there. In terms of this offense and what it can be, it will be in the hands of Arthur Smith to get the best out of it. Arthur Smith had an availability yesterday and was asked about his quarterback and his growth.
Yeah, he continues to impress. You know, he doesn't feel like a young player to me because he sees the game so well. He understands football. He's so smart. Sometimes I have to pull him back to be like, hey, you gotta let everybody else catch up to you. You know, we talk about one thing and he's ready to. But that's a great problem to have. Super impressed with him. He understands how to play quarterback and understands the game.
Yep, field general, that's Mr. Sayan, sees it all. Arthur was also asked how the offense could look different from spring.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always unknown, you know, any new job, and obviously even if you're returning every season, there, you know, things that are going to come up, right? It's kind of life. But these guys have been awesome. You know, the progress we've made from spring to how we started camp, we just got to keep stacking these days. These guys are competing. I mean, we've got a lot of depth and we got a lot of competition, which is an awesome thing to have.
And obviously, out of weapons at his disposal, we asked this of Arthur last Friday when he was on with this. He was asked about it yesterday as well, how to disperse all of the weapons at his disposal.
First off, we have an awesome staff and our players. I mean, they're very smart. You want to do multiple things. I mean, that's always a fine line, is how much you got to get good at something. But then when you're able to use players in different spots and you get this kind of competition and, you know, we don't have many mental errors, and that's usually a sign as you're going through camp about how much you put in. You know, you're just watching every day and assessing, like, hey, do we need to pull back? And that has not been the case with these guys.
One thing that I think I'm curious about, and we actually saw this yesterday in the Bengals game, and it's one of the trends that you're seeing a little bit more of in the NFL. Look, you're always going to zig and zag. So over the last decade, NFL defenses have gotten smaller, quicker has been the order. And so NFL offenses are saying, man, maybe we ought to stick our nose in there and run it a little bit. I'm curious how much we see Julian under center this year at Ohio State for Arthur Smith. I'm curious to see the play action game, if that is something that gets added a little bit to this offense, if Julian's under center a little bit more. We know they're not going to play with pace and tempo. We know they're going to grind games. I think everybody kind of understands that that's the philosophy. I don't prefer that, but I understand their thinking behind it, certainly. I think the look of it is going to be fascinating to me. What emphases does Arthur Smith put on this offense that we can notice? You're not going to notice against Ball State, but you're going to notice down in Austin. Is this a team that can be physical? One of the things we talked about, Reese, when we were talking to him on Friday, what's the thing that folks are going to say? What are your non-negotiables? He right away said physicality in the trenches. Like, they want to road grade people with that offensive line and those two backs.
Yeah, it's also not lost on me. They went back into the transfer portal for tight ends. I do think that they want to put their best five, and I think they're maybe a week out from making that final decision. I know they've got practices today and tomorrow, a day off, and they might have their Saturday shoe scrimmage next Saturday. And so I do think for a lot of these games, you're going to start to see, or you're going to just see them run the football and set up the pass through that. I mean, Ryan Day's even said as much, but I still think there's going to be a at times this season where Ohio State fans get frustrated because this Ferrari's not being allowed to let fly. And I think the coaching staff that Arthur alluded to, it's incredible staff, are going to want to say, we have this, but we want to establish, we want to dominate. We want to dominate up front. We want to dominate time of possession. We also want to make sure we're ready to dominate in the trenches in the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to take frustration from last season out on a lot of teams up front.
Yeah, they heard the noise, I think, for sure, Bick.
Yeah, and those guys weren't happy about it. And Luke Montgomery, Austin Saraveld, Carson Hensman, some of the longest tenured guys on the team and some of the leaders on this team. So, you know, whatever that grouping on the offensive line looks like, whether that fifth guy on the line is Ian Moore or it's Josh Padilla or it's Philip Daniels or whatever mix of that, they're going to have those guys ready and ready to go. And I think it was Carson Hensman talked about it. It's important, though, on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. They need to get that fifth guy in their rotation up there sooner rather than later, because the offensive line is a group that relies on each other, and they need reps. They need that cohesion. Now, mm-hmm. will there be parts? Guys are not going to be healthy all year, so the mixing and matching now will help them later on when injuries creep up. Hopefully they don't, but you think they will. But it's critical to get that five in there and have them working together.
100%. Yep. And my guess is they get an answer to that relatively quickly. The AP poll will debut today in about an hour and 45 minutes right after we go off air. Where will the Buckeyes land? We'll make some predictions on that and some other things coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
It has a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Rain chances are much, much lower for the rest of the day. We'll actually probably see some peaks of sunshine out there as well. Humid still, though, with highs in the lower 80s. Slight chance of a shower or storm overnight, otherwise partly cloudy skies, upper 60s. Watching for another chance of showers and storms on Saturday. Looks like the best chance is going to be later in the day. Humid, highs in the mid-80s. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are, and we are proudly and always sponsored by our friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 8 decades on that side of things. AP, or the AP poll is out today at noon. Last week it was coaches' poll time. Here's my disclaimer on preseason polling. Should there be preseason polling other than for guys like us to have fun and talk about with fans? No. No, there shouldn't. You shouldn't do that. And the reason you shouldn't do it is because the AP and coaches poll have the preseason AP and coaches poll have massive impact on how we view these teams. Massive. And it's something that I think gets lost by a lot of folks. But if you are, let's just pick a team in the top 10. Let's use the coaches poll for this. Let's say you're Texas A&M. If you are Texas A&M, they are number 8 in the coaches poll. They start the season number 8. Do we know if Texas A&M is the 8th best team in the country this year? How could we possibly? Look at all the turnover, the roster turnover, all the rest of it. Who knows what they're going to be? Let's take a look at Texas A&M's schedule. They go Missouri State. They go Arizona State. They go Kentucky all at home. Then they're at LSU. They are going to win the first 3 games. They're all at home and they'll be heavily favored in all. Then they're going to go to LSU to play Baton Rouge. At that time, and LSU will have played Ole Miss at that time, that very likely could be 2 top 6-7 teams in the country that are playing each other. If they were to lose in Baton Rouge, how far would they drop? To 11? To 12? That's the difference. And that's why the preseason polls matter, because it shapes the way we view these teams. And if you start the season ranked highly, you get an incredible benefit of the doubt with a loss. Does it matter that Ohio State's number 1 in the preseason? You damn right it does. They're going to play 2 teams in the coaches poll. They're going to play 3 of the top 6 teams in the country are on their schedule. If you lose to number 2 Oregon, it's a lot better than if you lose to number 12 Oregon. These things matter, man. And so while I don't think that they should probably be there, you could apply that to about a billion things in college football. Damn near none of it makes sense. And yet we love it. So it matters. You can't come on and say that a poll, a preseason college football poll, doesn't matter. It matters how we shape the conversation around these teams, and it matters the size of the benefit of the doubt that they receive. It is so difficult for a team, let's say Clemson, they're 23rd. Now, I think that's too highly ranked for Clemson. I don't think they're going to be anything this year. But let's just say that they have a year. They got to dig their way from 23rd up to get to the point where they are respected. They're going to go up. Better example is probably a team like Houston in the Big 12 that doesn't have the name recognition. If they start out and win their first 8 games, how highly can they get out of the Big 12 starting at 24? It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. So these things matter in a big way. Do we think when this thing comes out today, let's just do the top 5. Do you think there will be any changes from the coaches poll to the AP in the top 5? So the AP coaches poll goes Ohio State at 1, Oregon is 2, Georgia is 3, Texas is 4, Notre Dame is 5. That is the top 5 in the coaches poll.
I don't see any difference. They might have one team. Like, I've got Texas 3rd, Georgia 4th.
Okay.
But I don't see any of the teams being different, just where they are.
I do think it's going to be a little different, and I think the difference is going to be at the top. I do not think the AP poll voters are going to have Ohio State there. I think they're going to have either Oregon or Notre Dame as their number 1 team.
That would be a massive difference, because from the individual number 1 votes, Ohio State got 38 coaches' votes. The next highest was Indiana with 14. So that would be, so the 2 teams you mentioned, you said Oregon and Notre Dame.
I think Oregon or Notre Dame.
Oregon got 6 votes for number one. Notre Dame got 5 in the coaches poll. So that'd be a pretty big departure. I think one other thing you're going to see in the AP is I think you're going to see Indiana in the top 5 in the AP. I think those 2 defensive tackles they got back, and you start to wrap your head around Hoover and all of it, I think Indiana is going to be in the top 5, and I think Texas is going to be out of the top 5.
Yeah, I forgot. And like, since the coaches' polls been released or the coaches' preseason, Indiana got better as a team.
They did. So. Yeah, they added. Yeah, I mean,
that is a good point.
Texas, and I think Texas will fall out because here's what I know about writers: they're petty, just are. And they had Texas number 1 last year, and they weren't validated by Texas's play, not just in the loss here, but the way Texas played the first month of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if Texas was 6th in this thing. So let's do our predictions. Go ahead, Vic.
Didn't we have this last year where wasn't it the AP that said Ohio State was the 3rd best team in the country, and you didn't have 1 versus 2? You would have had 1 versus 2 consensus in that first game, the first time ever.
Yeah, there
was. But the AP dropped Ohio State to 2, where the coaches poll, I believe, had Texas, Ohio State 1-2, and I can't remember who the AP poll had in there.
All right, here, this was last year. So last year, the top 5 in the coaches poll went Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia, Notre Dame. The AP went Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia. So that was the difference in those 2 polls last year. Last year, the eventual national champion, Indiana, started 20 in the AP, 19 in the coaches. Eventual national championship participant, Miami, started 10th. So that's where the 2 polls started last year. All right, give me your predicted AP top 5, Reese.
And I was thinking about Oregon over Ohio State, but the 38 first place votes by the coaches I couldn't ignore, because I think there's going to be some carryover with the amount of AP voters that put Ohio State number 1. So I got the Buckeyes 1, I got Oregon 2, Texas 3, Georgia 4, Notre Dame 5. You want me to finish the top bottom 5?
So you went, all right, run that back. Give me that again. I was writing that down.
So Ohio State, Oregon.
Ohio State, Oregon.
Texas, Georgia.
Notre Dame.
Texas, so I got Georgia, the Dogs, Oregon, and the Longhorns flip to what the coaches was.
Okay. And, give me your top 5 predicted.
So I have Oregon, Notre Dame, Ohio State. I did have Georgia, but I think your Indiana point is good. So I'm going to put, they'll have Indiana in there at 4 and Georgia 5. So I will knock Texas out.
Okay. So I think that they will go Oregon 1. I think they'll go Buckeyes 2. I think they'll go Georgia 3, Indiana 4, Notre Dame 5. That's what I think.
Just wild in college football to think. Like, the coaches poll, they preseason top 25 comes out. Indiana gets 2 guys on their defensive line back from a national championship team last season.
Right.
What are we? Yeah. Like, even Texas got a left tackle back.
Oh, yeah. God, I forgot. I'm looking at this thing last year. The first AP poll went Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia. Obviously, Penn State and Clemson, those coaches aren't even, well, I mean, Dabo's still there, but Clemson fell off a cliff. Penn State has a total change. Then it went Notre Dame, Oregon, Alabama, LSU. Brian Kelly doesn't have a job. Miami, Arizona State, Illinois, South Carolina was such a darling. God. Michigan was 14th. Florida was 15th to start the year. They were 15th in the country. Iowa State, by the way, was 22nd in the country. Tennessee was 24th. Good grief. Tim May in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Bo could quit today and become the school drop offline coordinator. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, it's a Friday at 10:30. Time to visit our old buddy Tim May of the Tim May Show, and of course, right here on the Fanny Joints on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. What are your view on the preseason polls?
They are what they are. Stuff for guys like you and me to talk about. Fill half hours to full hours of debating who's right. And then you look, and Penn State was, what, number two last year?
They were two, yeah.
They were looking for a new head coach mid-season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just shows you, that's a great example of how off they are. This year, very curious, because Ohio State's replacing, has 51 new guys.
Yeah.
Texas has 47.
Mm-hmm.
How are those guys going to mesh? You know what I mean? I mean, so it's just interesting. You'd like to see them play five games, but it is fun to talk about.
It is fun, and they do matter because it shapes the way that we view these teams. And if you look at the very first college football playoff polls that come out, they are basically use the coaches and the AP as guidelines for that. And
yes.
If you start the year in the top five, you get more benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt if you start high.
I voted the AP poll for like 20-something years, and mm-hmm. Preseason. Let's face it, even back then. A lot of people just leaned on, well, what did they do last year? And you can't do that anymore. I mean, the blue bloods are still around, but you've got the upstarts, and Indiana's the great example of that. And but like you said, it kind of, that's the reason I'm glad we've gotten away from the polls deciding national champions and things like that, Bo, because how do you compare a team from the Southeastern Conference with a team from the Pac 10 or 12 or whatever it was at that time, way back when? You don't. You just, just kind of like throw a dart at the board. You hit whichever one you think is hot. A lot of people vote regional preference or regional bias and round down the line. But I just think it's fun to talk about, though, because I'm looking at this as being a tremendous, almost wide open college football season.
I tell you what, we did 20 most interesting, Tim, and the two programs to me that feel like have the fewest questions surrounding them are Georgia and Oregon. I think those two, they kind of know exactly. I'm not saying they're better than Ohio State. I would have Ohio State at the top. I think I just believe in Saban and Smith and all of that and the staff and the program, all of it. But just if you just say, like, who doesn't have questions, those two teams return pretty much intact.
Yeah, that's true. But I tell you what, I like the answers I'm seeing from Ohio State from just eyeballing them and stuff. And
like you just said, 51 new guys.
Yeah, 51 new guys, and some of them are playing vital roles. But the point is, almost every one of those guys we're talking about playing vital roles have played before. You've got video of these guys actually playing. A couple of them at Alabama. So I mean, and you expect improvement even from those two guys. For example, Quay Rousseau and James Smith, which is vital. I mean, replacing that defensive front, with the exception of Kenyatta Jackson, is huge in this season for those guys. But with that said, I've still got questions like on Dante Moore. Is he in fact a big game quarterback, for example? And with Georgia, I was just thinking about this as I was driving in. I'm about to record my podcast here in a minute with Dylan Davis, and I was just thinking, I would take Ohio State's roster over Georgia's roster right now. I mean, I would. Yeah, they're very close.
Well, yeah,
but
I
just like the depth of this roster that Ryan Day and Mark Fantoni have put together, and of course with assistance. With assists from assistants, but this is an extremely talented roster.
No one's saying they're not. What I think is interesting is if you look at the teams around the country, they're going to be occupied. You mentioned Texas, 40 some new starters, Ohio State, 51, Notre Dame, who returns a lot, but they're going to be using our receivers over there. Like, how quickly do they mesh with CJ Carr? Those type of things. If you just look at the R lads on Georgia and Oregon, there just aren't that many questions. Like, you're right. You have the right. And by the way, is Gunnar Stockton good enough to do any of this? I don't know if he is or not, but he's the guy that Kirby hitched his wagon to, and everybody else is kind of returning a little bit. So I just think we're in a world with wide open. It's just pretty wide open.
Yeah, I had the same questions about Stetson Bennett. A guy they tried to run off twice, and then he went.
They did run him off once.
He's right there with Tommy Frazier. You know what I mean? But no, you're exactly right. But every one of these teams have a little bit of a question mark in one form or fashion. Here, I want to ask you this because you pay attention, the two quarterbacks that they've almost got to show me this year in the big games that I've got still got a question mark about is, for example, CJ Carr. I think he's good, but I don't know. I mean, everybody's talking about him like he's Joe Montana or something. I'm not sure I don't see, no, I'm sure I don't see that. So it's, that's got to be proven to me, but they only play a couple of teams that are really Notre Dame worthy. You know, that team is curious to me. I think it's very well stocked, but I'm not sure that regular season is going to show me what I want to know about them.
Well, two new running backs too. Both their running backs are going to be studs right. in the NFL. That's why I have a lot of questions about Notre Dame from that standpoint. Tim, you brought this up just so our audience can remember. So they lost their first two games last year, and he didn't look out of place. He played pretty well against Miami and A&M. He did throw a pick in both of those games. But beyond that, like their schedule, they did beat USC like middle of the season last year, but he was 16-26 for 136. Like there's nothing on this, to your point, there is nothing on this schedule last year. There's not a game where you go, take him number one in the NFL draft. There just isn't a game. They don't have any of those games, and that's valid point. So I think that's what makes all of this so fun is because they weren't in the playoff last year. They're not going to have a schedule this year that's too daunting at all. So how do you know how good Notre Dame is? It's basically a one game schedule if memory serves. I think it's just Miami, isn't it?
Well, BYU I think is going to be an interesting game for them also.
BYU, I got it up. So they open with Wisconsin, poor Luke, and then it's they're at BYU on October 17th, and then November 7th. November 21, SMU, that's an interesting one too.
Yes. Because that's a team that has reloaded, in my opinion, SMU has. So there will be some tests, but it's not like when you look at Georgia's schedule, when you look at Ohio State's schedule, Oregon, it's not on the same par with that. Even Indiana's got a tougher schedule, which is hard to believe, right? Hey, whoever knew the state of Indiana would be the heart of college football, but it is what it is at this point.
Don't you say stuff like that on the radio and people are going to cut that part out, and then that audio is going to be everywhere. And it's going to be longtime Ohio State beat writer Tim May, icon of Columbus, saying that the center of college football is Indiana. So you got to be careful
with that.
The
state of Indiana.
Hey, man, you
got to say that's nuts. That is nuts.
It is.
Compared to 5 years ago. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. You got to say that you got a chance to see this Buckeye team practice for three straight days. I did as well. Love the look of it. Where are your questions that need to be answered before you get to week two in Austin?
Second quarter of the Texas game, is the offensive line playing like I think it can play? Will everybody get there healthy? I'm talking about offensive line-wise, because they're poised. If the offensive line is what I think it can be, you know, led by, in my opinion, Carson Hinsman may be the best center in the country. And then going from there, this team can be as good as any team you've seen play at Ohio State. I think it was like my first question to Matt Patricia, we got to talk to him yesterday, was with all these new pieces, he's had to reimagine this defense because it's not going to be the same. You know, and people can pine their day away about, man, I sure wish Sonny Styles, Arvell Reese, and Caleb Downs were still there because, boy, was that an awesome-looking group just walking onto the field, right? But they're not there anymore. So you've had to, you know, Matt Patricia's had to rearrange his own thought process of how you use certain players where. So that's going to be as curious a thing to watch in the opener against Ball State as it is against Texas. But definitely Texas with Cam Coleman transferring in, the secondary is going to a certain extent, have its hands full. Is it going to handle things? I think Devin Sanchez, he's champing at the bit, man, to be in that game. He'll be in his home state, but he'll be going against one of the premier receivers in the country off and on, Ian Jermaine Matthews. So, yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting to me is from 1 year to the next, and you've known this for a while, just like I have, college football teams change even before the transfer portal days. You know, you've got veterans going out the door and these new guys that are more touted than those other guys that were leaving coming in the door. How good are they going to be? But yeah, defensively, that's I'm curious about how Matt Patricia is going to change things up because he's been astute at doing that in his past.
Yeah, he absolutely has. I'm curious about Arthur. You got a chance. He had an availability yesterday. He was on with us on Friday. Where will you see the impact of him? Do you think?
I think from a mixed standpoint of not being necessarily overwhelmed by the challenge in front of him. This is no knock on Brian Hartline, but the hiring of Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator is an upgrade compared to last year. I don't think anybody can you can just look on how long they've been coaching and say that, right? But I just like the way he handles himself. You know, it's going to be a pro approach, meaning you're going to find the one or two weaknesses that you can exploit on the other side and try to make those guys have to beat you. Just like the flip side of it is defensively, that's what you try to do. But I think Arthur Smith is astute at, I like using that word, at least today. That's my word of the day. Astute at doing that, you know. And in the NFL, you don't always have the same personnel as the other team. And, but I just like the way when he had a good big time running back at Tennessee, they leaned on that guy, but you didn't have that at Atlanta. You know what I mean? And so there are different ways to do things, but dude, he's got a lot of weapons and a lot of egos, either, if not the players, at least the players' parents to deal with, gosh, too. I mean, dude, there's a lot of ways this offense can go, but it should be giddy up from the get-go.
Going to be well done. Way to tie that all in at the end, buddy. Appreciate your time. As always, look forward to the podcast. Thanks for your time, pal.
I'm going to be on the radio in the morning, too, with my man Tyler, so we're going to have a good time.
Oh, there you go. You have that to look forward to, which is very nice. Good talking to you, pal.
You got it, brother. All right, man. See you, man. Always a pleasure. You know that, both.
All right, here we go. Thing or not a thing coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on
the and have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show presented by The Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Friday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
In the second quarter of last night's 16-14 win for the Bengals over the Detroit Lions, Cincinnati's Chris Jenkins sacked Joshua Dobbs. After that sack, Jenkins hit the Macarena. Jay Morrison, of formerly of The Athletic, caught up with Jenkins after the game and asked him about that dance.
Why the Macarena? Huh? Why the Macarena? You don't like the Macarena?
No, I'm just curious.
Why? Hey, sometimes you feel like doing the Macarena. I mean, I liked it.
Pre-planned or spur of the moment?
Spur of the moment. You know, that's probably a one-and-done type of deal, but, you know, glad I got to do it.
Thing or not a thing.
Freshman year of college, Mazatlan, Mexico, we did the Macarena. I think that's when it. I remember it vividly. I remember, like, learning it down there. And then I remember coming back to school and, like, going to bars and being like, no, this is really cool. We all did it there. And then a bunch of cowboys looking at us like, what are you doing? You're doing what? I think we're just going to two-step. How about that?
I think it was because I had the game on at that point, just how into it he was. You thought he was never going to stop. He just kept going. It's always good when the linemen can get out there and celebrate and dance a little bit. I think the biggest thing about that is, man, were the Bengals getting down in the locker room after a big preseason win. They must know. Fun. Dan Hoard must have told them, Bo, and they must have been listening to this show that they're going to the Super Bowl this year. So.
It's my favorite preseason overreaction now. The last time the Bengals won their preseason opener, they went to the Super Bowl. So it's correlation. Yep.
This feels like a Reese bit. This could be a season-long bit for you.
It might. I mean, anytime they got to do their job.
Streak. Yeah, but anytime there's a losing streak, no worries.
Hey, just remember. It's fine.
Just remember.
They won the opener in the preseason. The last time they did that, they were playing the Rams in the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Speaking of Los Angeles, ESPN's Dave McMenamin reported Thursday Luka Doncic was not consulted about the sale of the LA Lakers. McMenamin says Doncic has a video call with new owners Bob Iger and Joshua Kushner next week. Doncic will be calling from his native Slovenia. Back in May, The Athletic reported Doncic had been in regular contact with now former owner Mark Walter and was even said to be impressed by Walter's level of communication with the Lakers superstar. After the $12.5 billion news was announced, Doncic had this statement, quote, being a Laker means everything to me, and I'm excited to get back on the court and bring a championship to L.A. I've gotten used to big changes over the last few years, but I know that no matter what, there is no limit to the potential of this iconic franchise. I look forward to meeting Josh and Bob so we can get to work building something special in L.A. together, end quote. Thing or not a thing?
The Doncic thing is not a thing to me at all, and the reason it isn't is because I think this was a complete shock for everybody. Sounds like these guys called Mark Walter on Sunday and said, would you be interested in selling the Lakers? And by Tuesday, it was done. It seems like that. Now, Walter's got a lot going on in his private life. He's being investigated by the Department of Justice for some financial things. You can do the Pepe Silvia red string thing a lot here and say there's probably a lot going on behind the scenes on this whole operation, as this is one of the most shocking sales of a team in history. So that, to me, is all a thing. Doncic's part of this is probably not a thing.
Yeah, this is not a thing. Why should he be consulted? I mean, as long as your owner is there and they're paying you what you agreed that you would play for, like, who cares? As long as these owners come in and they're trying their hardest to win and they're paying his check, doesn't matter who owns the team.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen joined Kyle Brandt earlier this week on Good Morning Football, and because renovations are going on in his house, Allen's MVP trophy is in a box in his basement. Brandt had a follow-up question about something Allen's saving until after they win the Super Bowl.
You've told me before that you have a special bottle of bourbon saved to drink after winning the Super Bowl. Is the bourbon bottle still out?
No, yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, the bourbon's still out.
It's not in a box.
No, not in a box.
All right, so you're a producer now. Produce me an image of this. When you're having that bourbon, when that day comes, where are you? Who are you with? Is it with teammates? Was it family? Is it by yourself? Like, how is that bourbon, the most important bourbon drink of your life, going to go?
Well, I hope that whole bottle is gone with how many people I'm sharing it with. Yeah. I hope everyone gets a nice little taster, and there's quite a few people down in the basement. But yeah, I mean, hopefully I'm not drinking a lot of it by myself.
Thing or not a thing?
Well, what's the bottle? I mean, I think I know, but
what do you think it is?
It's either the 20 or 23 Pappy Van Winkle. That'd be my guess. I mean, there's other ones you could do. Like King of Kentucky's an all-time single barrel that would be very, very cool. There's certainly some Eagle Rare stuff that would be out there that would be, the vintage stuff would be really extreme. But my hunch would be that it's probably Pappy. Could be birthday bourbon. There's a lot. But my hunch is it's probably a Pappy 23 or 20.
Speaking of the birthday bourbon, I remember there was a guy we were doing a job for.
Yeah.
And he was flipping out over a UPS package that was coming because it was a bottle of the birthday bourbon.
Yeah.
And he was like, I got to make sure this package gets to my house.
I bet he does. Yeah. You're going to want to make sure you have those.
That's the first thing I thought, Bo, was it's got to be some form of Pappy, right? It needs to be. Or maybe like an Eagle Rare 30 year or something like that that has got a high dollar. But yeah, you've got to ask him what kind it is there. I think it's cool that he wants to celebrate with a lot of people. And if he wants one more, I feel like he should reach out to this show because there would be a couple of us that would like to partake in that bottle of bourbon with him. I just hope he gets to drink it someday.
Yeah. All right, let's see if I can figure this out via ChatGTP.
Is he jinxing it, though, by having the bourbon bottle ready, or at least telling people he's got a bourbon bottle ready for when they win the Super Bowl?
I don't think so. I don't really believe in jinxes. I think that's fine. All right, so 2 days. So this is all happening in the last couple of days. It's a bottle, but okay, so somebody did a guess, and they went Pappy 20. That's my favorite of the Pappies is the 20. I think that's perfect. Trying to see quickly if he has one. Oh, my God, the pop-ups. Holy cow. Can we not have a pop-up? I guess he doesn't reveal it. Yeah, it's not revealed. This all happened like 2 days ago. With when he was talking about this, but he didn't reveal what the bottle was.
So maybe that's part of it. Like, people know there's something, but maybe that's how he's not jinxing it, is by not letting anybody know what it is.
Maybe he's a rye guy and he wants a Boss Hog that he saved. Who knows? Who knows? Could be any number of things. That's fascinating, though. By the way, Kyle Brandt's damn good. He's really good at content. He's good on football. He does rewatchable stuff with Simmons that he's great at. He crushes pretty much all the football that he's involved with. Final hour of the week coming up next. We kick it off with What We Learned, Bishop and Friends, right here on the
live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Week one of the NFL's preseason is underway. Bengals beat the Lions 16-14 last night in Cincinnati. Joe Burrow saw limited action, 5-6 for 39 yards. As for the Browns, Cleveland's going to start Deshaun Watson tomorrow in Chicago, and they take on the Bears at 1 o'clock. You can hear that game on The Fan following the Saturday Sports Spectacular. Watson's making his first NFL start any fashion since October of 2024. Shador Sanders is going to play the second half. Browns head coach Todd Monken still trying to figure out a starting quarterback. Sanders will get the nod next Saturday when Cleveland hosts Buffalo. In college football, we're 22 days out from Ohio State and Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Football Buckeyes are back to practice today and tomorrow. Ryan Day is going to speak with the media following Saturday's practice. And in baseball Friday, the Reds host the Marlins at 6:10. The Guardians welcome in the Padres at 7:10. This update sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling. Together to serve you better. Scheduled today at thewaterworks.net.
Your emails on the air, but we won't tell you where to send them. Hey, we're not doing all the work for you. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour on a Friday edition of the program. Doug Lee Maurice coming up in 29 minutes from now. Time now to figure out exactly what we accomplished this week.
We're not trying to do too much around here, but over the course of 5 days, you might have gleaned some stuff. Bishop and Friends present What We've Learned This Week.
I think the number one thing for me, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go here. This is a pretty busy week. You had, from a national perspective, you have the shocking sale of the Lakers. From a regional perspective, you had Shador Sanders getting the news along with Deshaun Watson. It would be Watson week one in the preseason, then Shador week two in the preseason. So those are pretty heady things. From 20 most interesting, we did Oregon on Monday, and you look at that roster and you go, if not now, when? I mean, they just don't have a whole lot of holes. If they don't take care of their business this year, like, when does Dan Lanning and that program actually scale college football's mountaintop? But just from, in regard to the things that we talk about the most, that 20-team playoff number coming out of the blue on Sunday night into Monday, no one had ever floated that around. And when we had Paul on yesterday, and he said that some of the folks at ESPN were not happy that that got leaked out, it seemed like that was something that ESPN and the SEC wanted to do some time to take some time to sell the idea of it. And that it got leaked out, and it was almost like by the time that they talked about it on Monday at that meeting between the Big Ten and the SEC, it was like, yeah, no, we're not doing it. They didn't get a chance to sell their idea. And from my vantage point, and I want the playoff smaller, not bigger, but acknowledge it's going to get bigger, it's never going to get smaller, I do take 20 over 24, and I get rid of the conference championship games. And we played this game earlier in the week that if you did a 20 model as it stands right now, and you got rid of conference championship games, and those teams would have been playing into the playoff, the matchups you would have got would have been pretty solid. So if you just use, let's use postseason, let's go to 2025, let's go final poll of 2025. Actually, that's not the poll you're looking for. You need the Week 16 college football playoff poll is the one that you need. Here you go. So in that scenario, your teams playing into the field, your would be Texas. So last year it would have been Texas versus Tulane. Would have been Vanderbilt versus Virginia. It would have been Utah versus Michigan, ironically enough. And it would have been USC against Arizona. Those teams would have played their way into the playoff. Now, the thing that I don't really understand beyond that would be then are the top four teams getting a bye even beyond that? So is that the way then they would play into a 12-team field? Is that the thinking here on a 20-team playoff? It seems like it, right?
Yeah. Was it
the
Josh?
Top four would still get byes?
That seems the most likely scenario in all that, if it were to go 20. Does it feel for you, because it was I think like Josh Pate threw it out there and someone asked the CFP committee about what Josh Pate had said. And from the reporting, the reaction was like, well, we weren't expecting to talk about this today.
Yeah, I think I don't think he reported it initially. I think he responded to it. I think the original reporting was from Dellinger, wasn't it?
Several reporters from this week had different
Dinich had numbers. It at 1.2, Reese.
Yeah, it was, what was it? The numbers I've seen this week are 16, 20, and 24. Which I guess if we're going to have to do this dance, just 16, and maybe, you know, we could trust the federal government, right, to come in, put a cap on that, right? Here's just stop it at 16.
Here's what a 16 would have looked like. So your first round games last year would have been Indiana, USC, Ohio State versus Utah, Vanderbilt, Georgia, Texas against Texas Tech, BYU, Oregon, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Miami, Texas A&M, and then Alabama, Oklahoma. So that would have been your 1 through 16 first round if you did a straight 16-team playoff.
Yeah. Be totally okay with that. Those matchups are great. You're going to get some, you know, belt-to-ass games. However you want to do this college football playoff, if you're still going to insist on bringing your little brother along to this thing, and by little brother, I mean the power, the group of four, five, six, however many there are. Right? The Pac-12's right? Coming back soon to a football field near you. They're not going to go, we've had this kind of sitting in thing or not a thing all week, but they're not going to do away with the reveal shows. December 1st of 2026, there's going to be a CFP final ranking show because, you know, 1.7 million people watched the rankings each Tuesday night once that thing started. So they're never going to give away that kind of content, especially with what it creates on their networks and how they're able to just monopolize all of the discussion that night, even when there's college basketball games to be played. It's like, no, we've got the football rankings out.
No way. It's great content.
I do want the committee to go away because I would prefer the algorithm, but we did the BCS thing and everybody hated that. And so when we went to the people and now the people are going to make these decisions, and December 1st is also going to be right now the floating date to tell ESPN about possible expansion into 2027. So
real quick, I think people hated the BCS thing because there was just two. I think if you brought a BCS model to pick these teams now, I don't think anybody would have a problem with it except for 21, 22, you know, whatever we expand to, the ones that are just outside of it, of course they're going to complain. If we put everybody in, somebody would still complain.
Yeah, there's no number.
The Division II champ would complain or something. But,
yep.
Bo, I guess I didn't think about this when all of this came out. And you're right. All of the models we saw had eight teams playing into this. That's ridiculous. Have two games, two play-in games, four teams to get into the last four spots there, the 13 through 16, and then you have your 16-team bracket. Like, that's awful weird to me. I don't know why you would do that, and you would have eight teams playing to get into a 12-team bracket. That doesn't make sense.
Well, it does, because what else is equals four? That's the amount of conference championship games currently on the slate. So again, your favorite words, inventory, content. If you get rid of four bell cow events from Fox, ESPN, whoever else has the, I think it's just those two. If you get rid of those, you have to give them something to make them whole. So you have to have four games to make up for the conference championship.
Then you don't have those teams with byes. Those teams are going to play again. So that's games you're getting too.
Well, that's why they're doing eight, though, is what I'm saying. Because if that replaces the four games from conference championship weekend, and then the playoff goes on as it did previously.
I get that. All I'm saying is you have four teams now that get a bye. If they are playing as well, you get that in your inventory, too.
Oh, you're saying
instead
like
of a bye, if they're playing Ohio an extra
States,
game.
Your Ohio States, your Indiana's, they're getting another. They're not playing an additional
game.
I
understand that there's something on the line if you do those four games to get into a 12 team, but I would rather see the better teams play another game, quite frankly.
I would too, but I'm not Ryan Day, and I would rather not have to play, and I'm not Kirby Smart. I do think that Kirby's got a point, and I think Ryan, like, you play, I don't think there's any doubt that Ohio State benefited in 2024 by not having to play in a Big Ten championship game. I think you benefit from there.
Yeah.
I think that's a, like, Georgia having to play Alabama and then go into a playoff, like, I think that's real. Like, that is a especially now the way the Big Ten is set up now. In the old days when the Big Ten was East-West or Legends Leaders, whatever, it would be a behemoth from one side against a nothing from the other. Now, I mean, God, we played Northwestern in Big Ten championship games. Like, what are we talking about? So, like, now, though, you're playing a haymaker in a Big Ten title game. And I think that there's some validity to that being a very tough thing. Now, Indiana overcame all of it last year, and they handled all the business. So you can do it, but I think it's really difficult to do. And I think the other thing that we're kind of reminded of is it does feel that the Big Ten and the SEC are a long way apart right now from where they need to be to get anything really tangible done on this. So my hunch is, as it stands now, money will overrule, so we'll probably end up being a 24 sooner rather than later. And I look forward to how they're going to make that work in a calendar. I think it's going to be very, very tricky. But at the same time, you can feel like the inevitability of it coming. So if you're betting on anything, I would say you're going to get 24. Because I think the coaches in the SEC want the 24. That's what I asked Paul yesterday when I was asking about Sankey's power. I said, a year ago, the SEC had all the momentum for a 16. But now a lot of their coaches are behind a 24, and it's just because of CYA.
I mean, we say that, but we've talked about this before. Before, if you were a coach at one of these schools and you didn't get in, sometimes that's okay. Now, if you don't get in, you're gone.
Yeah, you should be.
I think it's a two-edged sword here on that front.
Yeah, there's just 24 of you that are in that can say we've made it. It's kind of like what we do with college basketball, right? Did you make the tournament? That's the way it's going to be viewed. Are you a tournament team? Are you a playoff team? Well, yeah, there's 24 of them. There's a lot of playoff teams out there.
Like, I think somewhere like Iowa, Iowa's going to have expectations now to get in the playoff. That's never been there before. If you don't get in a playoff, does Kirk Ferentz last that long?
Who knows? That's a great point. I don't know. It's going to change the way that a lot of these fan bases view their programs, though, for sure. A very interesting anecdote on breakfast. We will get that for you coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here. On
Men in Ice.
I'll find something to do. I've got some money.
We're just talking about winning the lottery. That's what this whole conversation is based on.
Rothman and Ice. Weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Rain chances are much, much lower for the rest of the day. We'll actually probably see some peaks of sunshine out there as well. Humid still, though, with highs in the lower 80s. Slight chance of a shower or storm overnight, otherwise partly cloudy skies, upper 60s. Watching for another chance of showers and storms on Saturday. Looks like the best chance is going to be later in the day. Humid, highs in the mid-80s. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Find us on YouTube. Search WBNS Radio and you can see what Bo looks like. But only if you subscribe. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, Reese, you found this. I had seen the transcript. I hadn't heard it. So what's the setup on this breakfast conversation we're going to have here?
Well, Baker found the audio cut and slid it into Thing or Not a Thing. And I had, this is the first time I'm even realizing.
You don't know about it.
I don't know about any of it.
So Brady is on Shaq's big podcast.
Okay.
And he's just talking about, he was trying to get better in the off seasons. And I think it was around 2010. And he calls up Peyton Manning and says, hey, let's get together and pick each other's brains and try to become better quarterbacks. And then this is just him talking about his time with Manning that summer.
I called Peyton. It was off season. I was like, listen, let's me and you get together. I've learned from all the other quarterback coaches. Why don't me and you sit down and talk football for 3 days? I was like, he's like, let's do it. Come to my place in Tennessee. I fly down to Tennessee. Peyton and I spent like all the time. We work out together. We play golf together. We ride jet skis together at his house. And we, of course, we're eating meals. So sure. He sits down for breakfast and I'm like, hey, you know, so-and-so, Mr. Brady, they come into this old cabin. Mr. Brady, what do you want to eat? And I'm like, I'll take, oatmeal and, two scrambled eggs. And that's it. And they're like, Peyton, what do you want? He's like, I want biscuits, gravy, 3 pancakes, six bacons. Yeah. I want 3 sausages. Yeah. And I'm like, you eat all that? You know, and I was like the Southern boy with all the good health and for the comfort food. Man, I was like a totally different. I didn't even know
was
what
there
the
any
was
part
doing.
Of you that wanted to try that in your 3 days with him.
No, that's the thing. I don't have to. I'm like, nah, I don't want him the way I feel after that.
Oh, he'll be sleeping the whole afternoon.
I would be sleeping.
That's great. So number one, that's what happens when you marry a supermodel. And Brady would have been with Giselle by that point. To even 2010-ish, I'm pretty sure he would, or Bridget Moynihan, he would have been with one of them. And that's the byproduct even 16 years ago. Like, we all know what type of a fanatic Tom ended up being with his body. And I don't think that when you hear that anecdote, you don't say, well, there's a reason he was able to play till 46. Like, I'd rather have the Manning breakfast, although I'm not a big biscuits and gravy guy, and I don't do pancakes either. But from this, I mean, they're fine. They're just not worth it at this point. But I think that's that you get a little window there into the difference in how one can play potentially longer than the other is what Brady did with his body. And it kind of leads into a conversation about LeBron playing as long as he has. Like, this is around the time 15 years ago where we started to get a lot smarter about what we could consume. On the other side, the Manning breakfast sounds spectacular. Like, that is now, I rarely eat breakfast. And if I do, it's on the weekends. And I'll usually do like a big family breakfast. Like, usually Sunday morning is when I'll do it. And we'll do the eggs and the bacon and the waffles and the pancakes and banana pancakes, all that type of stuff. So I usually do that on a Sunday morning. I'll try to do that every week if we're all around. I try to do that. And I love that. I love a good big breakfast more than I love a white tablecloth steak now at this stage of my life, because it's just more rare that you have them. So that's what would be your Peyton Manning? You got the lake house. What's the breakfast like if you're Peyton Manning in that spot?
I mean, it's probably pretty close. I'm going to throw some fruit in there. I love a fruit cup for breakfast. Also think it cleans it up a little bit when you've got six bacons, three sausages, biscuits and gravy. I might swap the pancakes for waffles and probably not the biscuits and gravy, because I can't at this age walk around just with a brick in my stomach. Like, that, if you're doing that in the morning, you're not doing anything else until the evening.
That's a lot of pig too, man.
So
I'm
much.
Guessing that's a sausage country gravy is my guess.
Yeah.
I love that. It's so fascinating because you could argue these are the two best quarterbacks to ever play the game. You could make that argument. In my lifetime, it went from like Montana and Elway to Brady and Manning, and then into Patrick Mahomes, and just the different way they got there. It's like the old saying, there's multiple ways to skin a cat.
Mm-hmm.
These guys got there doing it two different ways. And it's also like a look into what their why was, because maybe Brady wanted to play till he was 50. Manning wasn't that guy, maybe, that he didn't worry about it, possibly. Who knows? But they're both arguably the two best to ever do it. I would say they're probably in your top five.
For sure.
If you're looking at quarterback play all time, but they just looked at it on two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Well, let's play amateur psychologist for a second here. You understand it. Peyton Manning's the son of Archie Manning.
He was never not the best.
He was never not identified.
Number one pick in the draft.
He was he was a number one recruit in the country. He was he was known quantity, even in the 90s when he was going to Newman High School in New Orleans. He was a known commodity as probably, like in New Orleans, probably as a 15-year-old. And then regionally, probably by the time he was a sophomore or junior. And even nationally, I would have been in high school at that time. And I remember getting Sports Illustrated and seeing a picture of him in his high school jersey in Sports Illustrated, which was the only way you really got national sports in those days, was to be a subscriber to Sports Illustrated. So you go to Tennessee, they get an injury. I want to say it was Todd Helton, the Colorado Rockies guy. I think he was the starter. Then he got hurt, the baseball player. Pretty sure he was the one. He got hurt, and then Manning elevates. I want to say he ends up starting like week two against UCLA his freshman year, something like that. And he ends up starting and starts the rest of his time at Tennessee. He ends up being a four-year starter at Tennessee. And he could have been the number one pick in the NFL draft after his junior year. But I want to say that was the Rams. That was the year Pace went number one, and he had to, he just, you know, he wanted to go back to Tennessee, or maybe he didn't like the franchise. Who knows? They were the St. Louis Rams at that point. And then he lands, goes and plays his senior year at Tennessee and is the number one overall pick in that draft. Tom Brady had to fight and claw for everything. I mean, they wouldn't even give him the job at Michigan. He was splitting time with Drew Henson and then finally got to start his senior year, but never really played much at Michigan. Then he's a sixth round pick. He's behind Drew Bledsoe, who was a number one overall pick. And at that point, not even in, reached the prime of his career. Still very young. So, I mean, the analogy here is we're using breakfast foods, but you can understand how one is hungrier. And in this instance, hungrier to stay at that level, where another guy is very comfortable in his spot. That doesn't mean that either one worked harder. You talk to anybody who played with Peyton Manning, maniacal in his approach, maniacal in his preparation, to the point. I mean, I've talked to Roy Hall about this when he was with playing with the Colts and Gonzo was there, and the precision of the things that Manning wanted. But I also think, like amateur psychologists, you can have a lot of fun with this. It's pretty good. Let's do this. Breakfast meat. What's your first round draft pick? Breakfast meat.
Bacon.
Yeah, bacon.
Crispy or soft?
Crispy.
Crispy.
Almost with a tinge of black.
I'm crispy too, yeah.
Like right on the edge of, you pick it up and it breaks.
Yeah, anytime almost. Someone's told me, oh, yeah, I burned the bacon, I go, no, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I have yet to have a breakfast sausage, whether it's, and I think they're both fine. I think breakfast sausage, either the patty or the links, they're both good. I have no interest in like breakfast ham or any of that. But I have yet to find a breakfast sausage that's in the vicinity of bacon. Like, it's stupefying to me if like the boys will, if they say sausage, bacon or sausage or bacon, they go sausage. Bootsy sometimes will. I'm like, wait, what? You have a choice between these two meats and you're going that way? So I'm with you on that. All right, eggs. Perfect preparation for eggs.
I can go scrambled.
Yeah, I'm a scrambled guy normally, too.
I like a dippy egg with toast, but if it takes too long or if I don't necessarily trust myself or the person cooking, maybe a couple after, you know, or after a night out, your hands are a little shaky. You're like, no, let's just scramble them.
All right, I have very specific rules on this. If there is a breakfast syrupy pastry, I.e. a waffle, a pancake, or a French toast, then I want what you folks in Ohio call dippy eggs. I would just call them over easy or over light. If there isn't a sweet component pastry-ish thing, then I want scrambled. So that's the way that I do it.
So you've got to have some kind of breadish material.
I need to have something to dip the dippy with and can kind of sop it all together, like the maple and the yolk and all of that coming together. Like, I need that. But because the scrambled eggs don't do that for me. Now I'm not having that. All right, breakfast pastry, for lack of a better term, breakfast bread. So you got waffle, pancakes, French toast.
Waffle.
Yeah, I think if it's easily accessible, a waffle. Normally I go pancake because they're just easier to make, but you know, waffle and put a little peanut butter on it. Oh, that's good.
I mean, French toast is pretty easy to make. All of these, waffle's the hardest.
Waffle's the toughest. Yeah.
If you're going to start from scratch, waffle's the hardest. Now, if you do the Eggo thing, well, that's pretty easy. But which, by the way, those are a delight. But yeah, so I think I'm a banana pancakes guy. I make a banana pancake, and then you do the peanut butter, maple. That's my all-time favorite of those. But if not, then I would probably do, I do like a cinnamon nutmeg French toast. That's pretty good too. But I think waffle would be third on my list of those. But they all win, and now I'm hungry. Doug Larisse in 2 minutes, Bishop and Friends right here on the
And Guest Hotline is sponsored by Weston Air Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Connect with the show on X at 971-BFS. Jump in our YouTube chat or just send a raven. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Friday, 11:30. Let's get smarter. We head out on the Bryant and Heating Cooling Fans Guest Hotline. Conversation with our good buddy Doug Lamarise, the Bill and Doug Show, talking Buckeye football on YouTube. And you're doing some appearances, buddy. You're going to be this Monday, do I have this right, at Denver Brewing and Spirits in Grandview. That is Monday night. Do I have that right?
No. No, we already did that one.
Oh, you did that one.
That was on July 17th. We've had five stops on the Bill and Doug World Tour of Ohio State Trivia. Three down, two to go. Next one is Thursday, okay. RJ Cinema Distillery and Tap Room in Cincinnati. So our Cincinnati folks, that's on August 20th. And then August 27th, we're going up to Brunswick, Ohio. We actually might change that because that's a Browns preseason game night. We just realized. So we might go the day before, day after. We'll keep you posted. But we're going to do more in Columbus. We had such a good time at Endeavor. It's not just us yapping, which we love to do, but we make up Ohio State trivia questions. And we do Ohio State football trivia. And the folks enjoy that. So we'll do it again in Columbus, and we'll have you out, Bo. You can come out and be a special guest.
I'd love to. Love to do that, my friend. So I'm curious, because I know you and you're a curious guy. When you're talking to Buckeye fans at these various stops that you and Bill are on, is there a consensus question that fans have about this team? What are they most worried about, if anything?
I mean, I think it's like it's schedule related, right? And that it's, you know, it's like Jeremiah Smith's going to be great. Like, it's been an interesting offseason of Julian Sand discussion. As we get closer to this, people, I think, are galvanizing behind Julian Sand. There's much more anticipation of a year two leap than concern about, you know, the last two games. I think the real discussion, we've had these actual discussions, is would you be okay as a fan with 10-2, but they're in, and maybe they're more hardened for the postseason than they were at 12-0 a year ago, right? And fans, I think, are prepared for that, right? So it's one of those things. It's one thing to say it now. It's another, like, hey, they lost to Texas or whatever, they lose to Indiana, like how fans will take that in the moment. But I think people aren't expecting perfection, and they're not scared of the schedule, but I think they are girding themselves a bit for, like, there's probably a loss or two coming, but could that get them more ready? So I think it really is about the competition. Lots of discussion about, like, back in the day, the Big Ten stunk. Congratulations on your better conference. It means your team's probably going to lose more. That's an interesting discussion.
It is an interesting discussion. Do you buy into that it's better to have a team more hardened? Or would you, because there's two things that are happening right now in scheduling. There's what Ohio State is doing right now. And Ross Bjork said last week they can't get anybody to play them past 2030 because nobody wants to have a robust schedule. Even though as we're going to a 24 team, you should have more room for error. But you're requiring the programs to do their part too. Or you could go Cignetti, who's not going to play anybody. He's going to play the Big Ten. That's it. He's playing nobody out of conference. If you were running Big State U, how would you do it?
I would definitely keep the Texas type of game, the Bama type of game, the Georgia type of game. I think that's important. I think it's maybe a net neutral, right? There's real opportunity there. It gives your team something, like all Ohio State's talking about Texas, right? It gives you something early in the season, the whole off season, to aim for, to focus on. I think that's good, and the loss won't kill you. Like, I much more would be, again, the idea that, you know, back in the day, with a two-team BCS or a four-team playoff, it's like, oh, you know, Ohio State lost to Texas in week two in 2005, and it was like, well, that's it, right? Like, that was much more crazy. That was much more of a risk of a bold stroke than it is right now. And so I do it. I think there's such benefit for your program, for your fans, for the sport, and I don't think it kills you. So I would do it. And, like, here's the thing. I don't know if you – when they were going 12-0 during the regular season last year, and it turns out Penn State wasn't any good and the schedule ended up being easy, I didn't, in the middle of it, think, uh-oh, they haven't been tested. This is going to be a problem. I didn't think it in the moment. I didn't. So now I don't want to go back and be like, oh, yeah, that was a problem. So, you know, I think they're embracing it now because it's what they have. I don't think you should fear it. I think it might be a neutral. Your team's your team, right? You can spin it either way, but I don't think there's any reason for Ohio State or its fan base to be afraid of having six ranked teams on the schedule this year.
Absolutely not. No, because you have the armada that's ready for the battle. So you shouldn't, you should have nothing to fear about any of it. And I think your last point is spot on. Like, I think a lot of this is stuff you and I talk about. And obviously it gets in coaches' heads, but I think it's entirely dependent on the team. Some teams can handle things, some can't. Could every team at Ohio State have handled the loss to Michigan 2 years ago and responded the way that that one did in the playoff? No, I think part of the reason that team responded the way that it did, Doug, is because it had tremendous senior leaders who took it very personally and responded positively to it.
You know, and I know, like, for instance, like a team like Wisconsin this year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think they feel like maybe they're younger, but they have, just in talking to Luke and what he's saying, it's like they have a little more of like, who cares? Let's let it rip, right? So it's an idea of like, oh, maybe you want to be, like, you can spin whatever you have in whatever way that you want. And was it that Ohio State's schedule was too easy last year, or was it that they missed a 27-yard field goal against Indiana and threw a goofy pick six against Miami?
Yeah.
And that's it. And it actually had nothing to do, like, it's not that they weren't prepared. They had two bad plays, or they might have been the undefeated national champs. So that's the thing. But which leads us back to, why are you afraid to schedule somebody, right? Like, believe in your program, make fun games.
Yes.
Right? And but also there's just so much more wiggle room. It's not going to kill you. And so maybe give them another year or two and maybe they won't be afraid to schedule the Buckeyes.
You got a chance to see, like we all did, three practices from this team. We talked to you a week ago and you were coming off the field and we were Devin McEwen had his day and all of that. What questions do you have about this team coming out of seeing it three straight days that maybe you didn't have or you didn't think you would have before you saw it?
I'm fascinated by, and it's what I was asking Matt Patricia yesterday, and I was listening to what you had asked him last week, the way the pieces on the defense fit together. And like, you thought maybe out of spring you knew how they would fit together. Then it's like, oh, wait, maybe it's not quite that. The Jay Simmons conversation at nickel, are they going to play three linebackers more? How many guys are they going to rotate up front? Quay Rousseau, what's his sort of pass rusher role? If we thought they were playing three safeties, now it feels like, no, they're probably playing two safeties. Like all that, I had written a piece at BillAndDougShow.com, like, did they play 19? Mm-hmm. Can they go 19 deep on defense in like a meaningful way? Last year, they kind of had 16 guys who played decent snaps, but really by the end of the year, it was 14. They rotated that defensive tackle one spot to get the 12, and then Pierce was the third linebacker. Sanchez was the third outside corner, and that was kind of it. But sub-packages, rotation, you know, Patricia used the word platoon and waves with you guys that I included in a story. Like, I thought that's interesting. And it's like, well, like, Arvell Reese and Caleb Downs were sort of two players in one, right? That it's like, so it's like, we don't have a player who's two players in one, so let's just play two players. Or maybe play three players, right? And so, can it keep you fresh? Can it keep an offense off balance? It's just not as much natural talent on the defense. But can Patricia piece it together in an interesting way to maintain the level? That's like, I'm super intrigued by it, and I'm just curious to watch him continually figure that out.
Yeah, took note of that too. The waves portion I thought was very, very interesting. Yeah. Totally different way. He seemed very energized by it. You got a chance to talk to Arthur Smith. Was that yesterday?
2 days ago was Arthur.
Wednesday with Arthur. Okay, sometimes the days run together. What did you glean from that conversation with Arthur in terms of, because one thing I'm always curious about, what will fans notice, right? What will they see as different?
Yeah, so I mean, it's part Arthur, it's part this focus on yards after the catch that I think comes from Ryan Day, that comes from Cortez Hankton, that comes from Jeremiah Smith. It's in concert, right? And so in talking to Brandon Ennis and Arthur Smith, it's like, you know, by the end of, I said to Brandon Ennis at the end, are fans going to notice a difference? And he said, yes. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if they're going to get guys in the passing game more on the move, right? I think we will see Arthur Smith influence in the run game. It feels like, and Bill Landis is all over this, like he's writing about it for us, like pace of play, which doesn't mean go fast, but which means Arthur Smith was talking about like the logistics of the operation. And does that just save a shave a couple seconds off each play here or there. That's not even a philosophical shift. That's just a fundamentals shift. We're just faster and we're more precise. But then also, can you vary it? Can you go, and Ryan's talked about that, elongate the game when you need to, shorten the game when you need to. And so like that, I think fans are going to notice it. I think in some of the styles of the play calls, but also just the operation of the offense, I am anticipating that people will come away, if not week one, then after week two against Texas, like, okay, I get it. Even if I can't explain it, and I'm not sure I can explain it, I know it looks different and I know it looks better.
Where can people get your content, my friend, other than here every Friday?
Yeah, so BillAndDougShow.com. So that's our website. We do two special podcasts a week over there for subscribers, and that's where we write all our stuff. We have a chat. And then find Bill and Doug Show on YouTube and any podcast feed, and we do a bunch of free shows every week over there.
Awesome. Great stuff as always, buddy. Have a great weekend. Thanks for your time.
Talk to you soon. Thanks, Bo.
All right, there he goes. Doug Lee Maurice, the Bill and Doug Show, talking Buckeye football. YouTube, you can find it, BillAndDougShow.com. And they continue their Ohio State football world tour with the next couple of stops. You get the details on that on the website. Time for three things on a Friday. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Buckeyes are ranked number one, so let's talk about them. Endless Buckeye conversation awaits you on your home for Ohio State athletics. The Fan. Ohio State football. Training camp report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safe Light Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. Ohio State's defense replaces eight starters and three top 11 NFL draft picks from last year. Among those expected to step into a larger role is linebacker Peyton Pierce.
I think we're a really fast, aggressive, physical defense that can do a lot of stuff. There's a lot of guys that are super talented and extremely athletic, so I'm super excited to watch everyone. I think it's going to be a heck of a year.
Pierce had high praise for the seven defensive players that transferred into the program this offseason.
Our coaches have done a great job, and a lot of our transfers have really taken in the culture and bought into it. And so that's what all it was about this summer, is just getting everyone bought into the culture and winning in the fourth quarter and fighting every day. And so the guys have really bought in, and you can tell like the brotherhood and the camaraderie of everyone. It's been great, so I'm excited.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Safe Light Repair, Safe Light Replace.
Among the seven transfers on the defensive side of the ball is redshirt senior Earl Little Jr., a versatile defensive back who was Florida State's leading tackler last season.
Just being able to have that blessing, you know, to play at different spots, I don't really have a specific, you know, mindset on where I should play. You know, it's wherever the team needs me at. I feel like I'm capable of doing it. As well as the coaches, so, you know, that's my mindset.
Little also gave insight into how much camaraderie the defense has built in fall camp.
Camaraderie's been great, as well on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I feel like guys are definitely, you know, gelling well together. And Coach Mick, he's done a phenomenal job with that, you know, just putting us in different groups, you know, whether that's, you know, we're working out in the weight room, we're on the field, you know, outside of ball we are. We all hang out with each other outside of the Woody. The brotherhood is definitely there. We're all connected, and we're all playing as one.
The season opener for the Buckeyes is September 5th versus Ball State. We'll have another report Monday. This is Tyler Danberg on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
For the ones who get to sail Buckeye Nation, join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss Fiesta's ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeyes sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Tomorrow's
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Our top men are working on everything except this show.
We have top men working on it right now.
Who? Top men.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese, what have on the poll today?
So the Daily Fan Pool is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, should the Columbus Blue Jackets name Zach Werenski captain of the team? 64% of respondents say yes.
I don't get that.
Best player?
I don't get it either.
Does it incentivize him to sign an extension next July?
I mean, if they name a captain for this season, I would think it's going to be Charlie Coyle. I've said I would just put the C on Fantilli and let him go. I guess you got to sign him.
Got to sign him first.
Yeah. You probably do. And then we had one as well, didn't we?
We had asked earlier in the show your favorite 1 year Buckeye fling. The four options were Maurice Clarett, Mike Conley, Greg Oden, Will Howard. 53% of respondents. We got almost 200 of them. Say Maurice Clarett. 30% Will Howard. 12% Greg Oden. 3% Mike Conley.
Yeah, the Howard thing. So, I mean, the idea that he's getting 30% is pretty remarkable.
There's the loss to Michigan on Howard's resume. There's the loss to Oregon.
Yeah. For sure. But he is, my gosh, is he beloved. And I deservedly so. All the charisma, all of the things that goes with it. That was a funny story that Arthur told with us last Friday when he said, Ryan Day reached out to him and he, texted Will. He's like, is this Coach Day? And Will's like, yep, that's him. All right, time for three things on a Friday. Hit it, guys.
One, two. Three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. So two scrimmages in for the freshman NBC, and I will just say that I thought I was kind of prepared for having a high school, and it's freshman. He's on the freshman team, so it's not like he's in the mix on Friday Night Lights or anything like that yet. But go to big school, so very expected, very proud of how he's going. But high school football fan parenting is built a little bit different, and we have played two scrimmages, and already two kids lost to broken collarbones. Now, that can happen in any sport, but it's just amazing. Like the type of hitting that you're starting to see, and I've covered high school sports for years, and obviously Buckeyes, NFL, all of it. But when one of yours is involved, like, and your mentality becomes like, oh my, every time they get hit, you're like, just get up, dude. Makes a big catch, just get up. That was a big hit. Get up, and then you watch it. So it's going to take some getting used to for your Uncle Bo.
First thing out of me, there's a school in Southwest Atlanta, Northgate, is charging this upcoming fall $25 per event to media to cover their athletic events. So if you want to cover the football team on the sidelines, it's $25. If you want to cover all of their sports, it's $200 for the media credential. And now Northgate's saying it's because they want to make sure that everybody that is on the sidelines or is covering the event is doing so from a reputable outlet, not just someone coming in and trying to film stuff. But I wonder, you know, if someone were to try that here in Ohio, how that would go over.
So I think the easier, just as a rebuttal to that, the simpler thing would just be vet people you give credentials to.
Right.
Like, why do you have to charge them?
Yeah, it's a good way to get your program not covered at all. Second thing for me, Bo, we're 1 week away, man. High school football is here. I've been preparing for it probably ever since I got back from Daytona, but it's like cram session time now. So this weekend, I'm going to try to get over tonight to Reese's old stomping grounds and watch a UA and Watterson scrimmage. And then the rest of the weekend is getting everything ready for the high school football season.
Number two to me, with all of this fiasco in Chicago around the Bears and their stadium relocation, I just saw a video here in the break of Bears president Kevin Warren announcing the sole focus is building a state-of-the-art stadium in Hammond, Indiana. And they would not change their name, obviously, from Chicago to Indiana. Unless Illinois changes their demand soon, the Bears will be gone to Hammond, Indiana. And I just continue to just be absolutely stupefied by the fact that the Chicago Bears saw what Kevin Warren did with the Big Ten and said, give us some of that. And let's have this guy lead us through the most critical stage of our franchise in building a new stadium. Like, what did anybody see with this dude in the Big Ten that would lead you to believe that he should be in charge of something like this? Craziness. Absolute craziness.
Third thing, second thing for me, I should say, the breakfast discussion got me thinking about like the best breakfast items I've ever had. And okay. I remember as a kid, the Market Day French toast sticks were undefeated. Like, those are better than Pop-Tarts. Those are better than Eggo waffles. I don't know if you can purchase them anymore. I don't even know if Market Day is still a thing anymore. But I think back to that. Those things were incredible. Shame if they're discontinued.
It's funny because I was thinking about the same thing, Reese.
Those Market Day French toast sticks?
Not those, but just some of the best breakfasts I've ever had. And when I'm on vacation in Florida in the summer, that's one of the things maybe I enjoy more than anything. Everybody knows 7:30, you meet in the lobby and we're going to breakfast somewhere. Mm-hmm. So there's usually four, five, six guys. Sometimes a couple of the girls or the kids will get up and we all go to breakfast. It's one of my favorite things. There's awesome breakfast spots down in Florida that are just like breakfast and lunch places. And we hit them up and they're awesome. And then it got me thinking about some of my favorite things. And there's a place in Daytona called Krabby Joe's. It's on a pier. Mm-hmm. And they have the best home fries I have ever had. Like, it's not even close how ridiculously good these things are. And then one of the times when I met my buddy who lives in Kansas City in St. Louis, we found this little joint called the Biscuit Joint. Mm-hmm. And it has the best hash browns you will ever eat in your life. And now I just want to leave here and go get breakfast somewhere.
The South does a good job with breakfast. They do a very good job with breakfast, no matter where you land. Number three for me, so NBC was doing his fantasy football draft. I said, well, why are you doing this draft so early? Like, we don't know what injuries are. This is crazy. But, of course, you can't argue with 14-year-olds. So he was doing his draft, and he was the average draft position in the league that he was doing it in was, for Quinshon Judkins, was like in the 60s. Pay attention to the scores, kids. Draft Quinshon Judkins a lot higher than that.
Yeah, he's going to crush it fantasy points wise.
A lot higher.
In Columbus drafts, he will go much higher.
He's going to go a lot higher. He needs to go. He's going to have a year. He looks spectacular, and he's going to have a year.
Final thing for me, I did not partake the Field of Dreams game last night on Netflix. I have no interest in watching baseball on Netflix. I'm almost out on the Cleveland Guardians season. They were shut out by the Tigers 3-0 yesterday afternoon in Detroit. Guardians are the first team. The Guardians became the first team with yesterday's loss since 2014 to have been shut out without a single batter striking out. New and fun ways to lose baseball games. I'm out.
Final thing for me, don't go anywhere. What a treat for your Friday afternoon. Brandon Beam is in for the fellas today on Rothman Beam's and Ice.
True
now,
professional.
Unfortunately, you've got to temper that with Adam King for the 3 hours, but I think Beamer's worth it, so make sure you stay tuned for that.
Beam, just turn his mic off. Just do 3 hours solo. Come on.
I'll tell Isaiah when he gets in here.
That's right. Tell Isaiah that's how you got to manage that. Those guys will do a great job. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are back Monday, Bishop and Friends, right here on the